All right, and welcome to this very special edition of the Interracial Drawn Podcast, Purple Lemonade, as I have taken to call it. I am joined by three of my internet girlfriends. Welcome, Miss Ronnie Dean Byrne, to the show. What's up, Ronnie?
Hello.
Awesome. And we also have Miss Smart from the Whiskey, Wine, and Moonshine Podcast. What's going on?
Nothing much, just ready to get to talking.
Oh, yes. And finally, last but certainly not least, one Brown and Bella. How are you doing today?
I'm a little sick, but I'm calling in information, okay?
Yes, yes. Getting us all information. And if you're unfamiliar with any of my guests, they were here with me just over a month ago, right before the Super Bowl, when Beyonce graced us with formation, and we had a lively discussion about that. But Ronnie is a 13-year public educator who's nearing the very tail end of her PhD education, very exciting, soon to be Dr. Ronnie. And she has a passion for reading and literacy and has morphed into her actively pursuing accuracy in both textbooks and children's books. And we're always happy to have her bring her Black Girl Magic to the show. And Miss Smart is a New York born girl. She was raised in Detroit. She's a Howard University graduate. She's a member of DST Sorority Incorporated, and she lives outside of DC. And she started in social media as a blogger back when there was like nobody blogging. And now she's just awesome on the internets all the time. And as I said, one of the wonderful co-hosts of the Whiskey, Wine, and Moonshine Podcast. And last but not least, Brown and Bella is the owner of La Bella Body Care, which I got a big shipment of this week, which was amazing. The stuff is really awesome. You guys should check that out. And all around Twitter badass. Actually, I saw you slaying numerous people just today. So how sick are you really? Let me ask you that.
No, I've been coughing up like I was gonna hack up my lungs, okay?
Luckily,
and so
Twitter
I'm just
was there.
Sort of like bedbound, and I had time on today.
Well, I was happy to see all of that, and so we are dearly beloved gathered here today to discuss two important things that happened this past week. One, of course, is the passing of our beloved Prince, and we're going to start with that conversation, and then segue into some deeper conversation about Lemonade itself. But let's start talking a little bit about Prince. Obviously, I played at the top of the show the 2004 Grammy performance of Beyonce and Prince doing Purple Rain to open that show. What were your first reactions to hearing about his passing? How did you hear about it? And kind of what, how did you go through all of that? We'll start with you, Ronnie.
Oh, sorry. I think I heard about it maybe from you first, Leslie. You'd posted something maybe that TMZ was reporting that he had died, and I was like, not the purple one. Like,
Oh, did we lose her? We might have lost her. Miss Smart, are you still there, Ronnie?
About it, said it. It was just so, like... Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, we couldn't hear you for a second there. It's okay.
You hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now. Go ahead.
Okay.
Oh, okay. But I think it was just, like I said, I found out. Oh, sorry. I'm making a noise. It was via social media. But one of those moments that was very surreal, where you sort of think, you know, your icon is going to live forever. Mm. I mean, that's how it's supposed to be. Mm. Like, Stevie Wonder is still here. It's supposed to always be here. And so, yeah, it was via social media, and just kind of watching it all sort of unfold in front of our eyes, was tough. It was tough for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Brown and Bella, how about you? What did you hear about it on social media as well? Or were you?
I heard about it on social media. A tweet came by, and I think I saw the original TMZ tweet.
Mm.
And so the first thing I said, I was like, nope, until I hear this from his people, because, you know, he just had the flu or something, or they'd had to land his plane, or he was sick or something.
Right.
So once I saw that and I saw that he passed, I was like, no, I need to hear it from his people, or somebody else has to confirm this before I'm going to think that Prince is gone for real.
Mm.
And mm-hmm. not too long after that, like, the confirmations from their media, like, where he lived, started coming in. And I was just so, like, the same way she felt, like, how can, like, Prince, what? No, like, this. And I just put something up and I was like, today's canceled. And I had to log off. Like, I logged mm-hmm. off of everything. And I was like, I'm just going to go, like, I was distraught a little bit. You know, I was a little distraught. Yeah. So I was like, I'm just going to, like, throw myself into my work. Like, no way Prince is dead. This is messed up. And when I came back on, you know, it was just going crazy.
Mm. And how about you, Miss Smart?
I also didn't believe. Morgan Freeman type of situation. Mm-hmm. He can't possibly be dead because what is he, like, 40? I mean, realistically, I know he's not 40, but I didn't get old enough to just die from Prince at all. I mean, he had just been in concert. And by the time I came back upstairs, it was more official. And I even still waited in a piece of denial then. And finally, I went ahead and told my coworkers because they're not on top of these things. Mm. And so, yeah, I still don't necessarily believe it. I mean, I'm still in denial to some degree.
Yeah, I saw it so early. I actually saw the first TMZ tweet when they just said that somebody had died. And then I saw one person write, you know, are we sure this person isn't Prince? And actually, until I saw that second tweet, it never even occurred to me that Prince could possibly be dead. And so it was really shocking. And then, you know, and I told you this, Ronnie, that day, I was like, TMZ, they're not wrong. Like, I have yet mm-hmm. to see them be wrong. They don't make general declarations about stuff unless they've, like, paid really smarmy people to tell them information they probably shouldn't have. And how they get their information right. is one thing, but they don't play when it comes to being accurate. That's kind of the thing they're known for. But it still was really shocking. And I think for me, it was most shocking because if I think back to, you know, other previous, especially music superstars, Whitney, MJ, I remember hearing about their deaths and it was sad and I was upset and it was a loss, but I also wasn't surprised. I kind of was like, yeah, I could see that. Like, I could understand where this could occur. But with this, I just felt completely blindsided. I had no concept of, it just seemed like the words Prince is dead, like, they don't compute in my mind. They didn't make any sense coming together. And honestly, they still don't. So, and I've heard that from so many people, just kind of that same, you know, just not really this disbelief, which I don't think we've had recently. We've had so many people that have, you know, kind of been on a downturn or had a lot of problems and things that kind of led you to think that they probably were in a place where you could see it happening. And I just feel like with this, as a fan, I felt really blindsided and not, you know, obviously he's a very private person, so I'm sure stuff was going on with him all the time. But certainly to the outside, it just seemed like he was still touring. He was still writing music. He was still being shady as fuck on Twitter and online. I mean, he was just being Prince. And so I think that it was just, like, so strange to think of him just being gone just like that. Have you all always been fans of Prince? And how did you come to interact with this music for the first time? Do you remember all, you know, kind of when he became somebody that, you know, you recognize as somebody you liked a lot?
Seeing Purple Rain. I'm sorry. Of course I remember seeing Purple Rain, and I have two older sisters. So I want to say that when we went to see it, I'm quite sure I probably wasn't supposed to go see it. So I'm 38, so I can't remember how old I was whenever it came out. But again, I'm sure that I wasn't supposed to see it. But again, I had big sisters who had posters on their wall, and they had Michael Jackson and Prince. And so I was always sort of aware of who Prince was and liked him. But for me, I didn't really fall in love with Prince until I got to college. And a friend of mine, her name is Rhonda Nicole, she's a blogger and a musician and stuff, and she loved him. Like, she quite literally, like, when I heard that he died, the first person I thought about was Rhonda. She's my sorority sister, and I was like, oh, my God. Like, I really, she just started a new job out in Vegas. I was, like, I called up all my stores, and I'm like, we have to check. We call her Bunny. We have to check on Bunny. Like, what are we going to do? Mm-hmm. Like, literally. So when I got to college and I met her and she was so in love with him, like, she really made me, like, totally reevaluate. Like, okay, let me go back and listen. And so for me, I sort of had this I really fell in love with Prince, I guess, when I was, you know, when I started college and was like, oh my God, this man is a freaking genius. And then just, I was one of those people like, if anything he had came out, I'm downloading the whole thing, sight unseen, that's it, I want it all. It's, I believe it's wonderful, so let's go for it.
Excellent. How about you, Miss Smart?
I remember, I know Prince from his very first album because we had the actual big album and the A-track.
The LP.
And yes, we had that and the A-track, that big disky thing, not disc, you know, tape thing. Mm-hmm. And I remember I knew some songs that I was really young, and then, I'm sorry?
No, go ahead.
I got to turn off my timer. Sorry.
Okay. Then I went to see Purple Rain, and I remember my mother took me, and she covered my eyes for the sex parts. And if anybody's from Detroit or listening from Detroit, we went to the Renaissance Theater in the Renaissance. Then from there, I knew about Prince basically because of music and the idea that he played the guitar and I played the violin and, you know, multiple instruments type of thing. And I think I said earlier, I wasn't necessarily, especially maybe in high school, a big Prince fan. But as I got older, went to college and whatnot, I became very aware that he was the type of person who was who he was and let nobody change him, you know. Because back in that time, you know, when he came out, he had the long hair and it was sort of weird for a black guy in the Midwest to still have that going on. And you know what? He just rocked with it.
Yeah. Miss Bella, how about you?
Well, with Prince, he's something like my mom used to play Prince when I was younger. Mm. Like my mom did not let us play like rap or anything really on her stereo or like in her car or anything like that. So for me, it came from my mom, but I didn't really get into him for myself, like in terms of kind of realizing like, damn, I know like a lot of Prince songs. Like I was actually thinking about that today, like how many Prince songs I actually have know or heard. But I got more into him as I got older, like into college, and like I was listening to some of the songs, and I'm like, you know, these are songs that I've just have been around my entire life, like in the background for my mom, or you know, just like I've been listening to Prince forever. So when I heard that he died, it seemed so like weird. Like, what do you mean Prince? You know, like what do you mean Prince is gone? But so that's sort of how I got into him. And I used to put them, especially like when I used to work out, I used to always listen, like have Prince songs on there just because he has so many different, speeds. Like he has slower songs, he has fast songs, and he has so much music that you can do a lot with Prince. Like he can do everything. Mm-hmm. So I always liked Prince, and I got into him more as I got older. Yeah. So that's where it comes from for me.
I know for me, like I also have older sisters, they're much older than me, 11, 12, and 13 years older than me. So they were all really into Prince, and they also snuck me, Ronnie, in to see Purple Rain when I shouldn't have been seeing the movie. And I remember the thing that really struck me was like this black dude playing rock music. And I remember thinking like, oh, this is like, this is so different. It's so unique, and he's so good, and all of that stuff. And then when I was in high school was the new Power Generation era of Prince, and obviously he was huge on MTV, breaking through the color barrier there along with Michael Jackson, and also just dominated the charts, dominated the video music charts, dominated all that whole time that I was in high school. So for me, like, I really connect with a lot of those songs and that music, and I remember like dissecting the because he's so good with the wordplay in his songs. You know, his lyrics are so, there's so many double, triple entendre that he throws in all of this imagery, and you're like, oh crap, he's talking about the clitoris, like literally, like, and I remember like having all of these like, realizations and being like, oh, and we'll get into this in a little bit when we talk about our favorite songs or songs that spoke to us directly. But for me, that was when I really started being like, oh, I fucks with Prince. Like, that's when I really started thinking that, you know, he's my dude. So one thing that struck me, and I don't think I've seen this kind of reaction, is the world reacting to this news. And we saw how far his reach was in terms of like as far away as Australia, just the whole world turning purple in mourning for him. And then also there was kind of this pop culture response where you saw, you know, NASA responding to it and Chevrolet and all of these things. Where do you guys think that came from? I don't think we've seen that before. I don't know if it's just a confluence of it being 2016 and there's a lot more ways for people to get this information out, or his reach was just that far, probably both. But what surprised you about that, or if it didn't surprise you, what did you like? Which thing did you see and you were like, oh, that's really cool?
Hello?
Yeah.
Hello? Okay. I'm sorry. I lost you guys for a minute.
Okay. I lost you. I lost everyone too.
Oh, goodness. Everyone's back. Did you hear the question though? I don't know if you did or didn't.
Yeah, I heard the question. I think that a lot of the people in positions to make these statements are around my age and maybe a little bit older. Mm. So Prince is on the soundtrack of their lives as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I think he's really the first time that everything sort of is like the perfect storm, like she said, with the ages, with social media, with, you know, just so many ways for people to actually engage about him, you know, so they can do, like you said, how NASA did a tweet and you know, they can just put together these things very, very quickly now, the way the social media works, and disseminate it to everyone for that type of thing. And then in terms of like the Eiffel Tower going purple, I think he's really unique in that we connect a color to him. Mm. So it's really easy for people, you know, to do a memorial with a purple light. You know, if you can light the entire, I think, was it the Empire State or something,
yeah,
that
Empire
they
State
made
Building.
In purple in New York for him. Yep. Mm-hmm. You know, if once you hear, they're like, okay, it's just a matter of flicking some lights on now, you know. And mm-hmm. But because with him being so closely connected to purple, it made it even easier, I think, for other for them to dedicate certain things to him that maybe they couldn't do that maybe they couldn't do for another artist.
Yeah, that's really true about the color, because actually a friend of mine runs, there's like a bridge that you can light up here in my podunk little town of Grand Rapids in Michigan. And I was just like, hey, can you turn it purple for me? And he's like, yeah. And he went down and just did it just because I asked him to. So, and I probably was like, I don't know what I would have said otherwise, but because I had that possibility of like, oh, we can just turn the bridge purple, that'll be cool. I was able to do that. So, yeah.
Mm. I also think, too, that, you know, while it's not a pretty thing to talk about, you know, we all sort of knew that Whitney was sick, as in, you know, was battling addiction, right? We all sort of knew that, right? And we all sort of had it in our minds that maybe something wasn't all the way right with Michael Jackson, right? But I think that we all sort of held Prince in this regard, like, you know, he's the funky one. He's the purple one. And you don't really know anything about his life. And so you're just assuming he's just trugging along and he's okay and everything is fine. And so I feel like his passing, it was the impact is so great, not just because his music was so great, right? Like it was, but also I think that because it was like, we didn't expect that. Like, not that you expected Whitney to pass away like she did, but in the back of your mind, if you know you're dealing with someone who has an addiction, you think, gosh, you know, I don't know how much longer she can live that fast, right? You know? And so I feel like in that way, you know, we sort of saw him and see him, you know, he was touring and, you know, people were talking about, oh, he's got these tours. And so I just think the suddenness of it makes people feel it even more. Mm-hmm. And then I also think that, because I hate the whole, you know, he transcended race thing, because I think that's complete bullshit. Yeah. But I think that when it comes to music, like, it's good music. Mm-hmm. And it's good all over, you know. And, you know, there's some real soulful stuff. There's some real, you know, rock and roll stuff. And so I think there's so many people, you know, just loved his music everywhere, right? And I think that if you sort of look at that, it's like, well, yeah, that's why they're mourning in Australia, you know?
Yeah, and we saw so many music icons talking about him. You know, there's that famous thing with Eric Clapton when someone's like, oh, how does it feel to be the greatest guitarist alive? And he said, I don't know, I'll ask Prince. Like, legit, like, yeah, that's not me, that's Prince. Or Dave... Dave Grohl, the drummer from Nirvana, was like, oh, is Prince a better, you know, musician than you? And he's like, he's a better drummer than me. Like, you don't understand. Musician, he plays the instrument I only play better than I play it. So, yeah, it's a whole different thing with him. And I think that definitely connects. And like you said, his music was so eclectic. He really allowed himself to go wherever it took him and express himself musically in so many different ways. And it was always so transformative. You didn't know what he was going to look like. You didn't know what the visual was going to be. And he was so into the visuals. And I think it allowed him to connect. I mean, I think I tweeted out the day, it's like, I name an area of society that Prince hasn't touched in some way, whether it's fashion, whether it's music, whether it's, you know, technology, which he was a very cutting edge artist in terms of music. And even we talk about commerce and him changing his name and writing slave on the side of his face. These are groundbreaking things that changed the music industry. So of course, you know, you see the impact that he's had so far reaching in our personal lives and then in the wider society. So of course, let's play some Prince. I asked all of the ladies to send me their favorite Prince songs in three categories, and I've dubbed them, and I'm going to give a shout out to Asia Renee, my girlfriend from Philly, who came up with these categories. So the first is love songs. The second is sex songs, because, hey, we're talking about Prince. And the last is sing-along songs, because I don't know about you all, but singing along with Prince is one of my favorite pastimes, certainly with my girlfriend. So we're going to start with the love songs, and we will play a little bit of Ronnie's favorite. My goodness. Wow. Ronnie, what made you pick that song? What's it mean to you?
Girl, I am over here with tears in my eyes.
Me too.
I love that song so much. I always tell my husband, can we get married again so that can be our song? Because I love it so much. You know, I teach writing, and I always teach my students, you know, you better believe that when you write something, I don't care what you're writing for, that first line, like you better grab your audience quick, because people are fickle and they will put your stuff down. So you better believe that when you start off, it better be great, right? Mm. So So the beginning of the song is everything. Mm. I mean, he plays the music, then he just says, baby. Mm. And you just like, you listening. Like if your man or your woman or whatever says that to you, you just like, I'm listening. And then until the end of time, I'll be there for you. Like, what? Oh my, you own my heart and mind. Mm. I'm done. Like, I am so done with that song. I'm already crying at that point. I mean, at that point, you could just do whatever.
So good.
And I was listening to the song, and I can't even remember. But I don't know if he necessarily ever says, I love you in the song. But he says, I adore you. Like, oh, my God, are you kidding? So, yeah, I could listen to that quite literally. And that's what I was listening to when I found out. I just played Adore, like, over and over and over and over again because I love it that much.
I will say the few weddings that I have been to that have had this as their wedding song, it was like, y'all gotta go because we're ready to go to the bedroom. Like the couple was like so all over yeah. each other. They right. cue up the song and those bars start playing. I'm like, uh-oh, this is gonna be messy. Watch
right,
out.
Right, like close your eyes.
Close your eyes, kids, because they ain't playing on that dance floor right about now.
Right.
Yes. Okay, so next up we have Brown and Bella's choice for love song.
It's 10 o'clock.
Damn it.
What made you choose that one for your favorite love song from Prince?
Because it's a little off the beaten path for a love song, I feel. But for me, it's just like you feel him, like the longing, like pick me, do you want me? Mm. You know, like I feel like I've always just felt the emotion in the song, like. Mm-hmm. Whatever's going on in that situation with him, with this love triangle, honey, I want to know, like, more. Like, I'm always just like, what is going on here? So, that is, for me, like, the longing of that, like, the love. Like, it's sort of like a love triangle, and I'm just so, the emotion in his voice, especially when you get to the end, like, he is pleading, like, really tell me what's going on, you know?
He's so serious. And,
right. It just always stuck with me. It's always like it's one of my favorite, absolute favorite Prince songs ever. So there
good.
You go.
So good. I'm going to play mine next. Here we go.
No, you ain't ready. I mean, ready for us.
Would you be playing? This could be us, but you keep on fooling around.
you're the cage to my death. What you say? Hell and ever in love, ooh, baby, yeah, this could be us.
I picked that song, A, because I love his vocal on it, and I love all his little, like, I know you want me like a new pair of shoes. I love all of that. And I love that he took an internet joke and made this bomb-ass love song out of it. Only Prince could do that. I just, oh gosh, we're going to miss him a lot. So last but definitely not least, we have Miss Smart's Choice for favorite Prince love song. Here we go. Beautiful song. And what made you choose that one for your fave for the love song?
It's because to me that says, now even though, you know, the woman left him and all, he's saying I can do all this dope stuff, but none of this dope without you. Like, you add the flavor to my entire existence. Yes. And I like that.
Oh, I love that. Yes. The sentiment is so good. Obviously made famous by Sinead O'Connor. But I love Prince's versions of it because, I don't know, you really hear, like, the longing he was putting into it. Hers was very, almost like a lament, but his is something else. It's really great. Oh, boy. All right. So we got the love stuff out the way. Awesome. We're going to move into the sexy side of things. Now, funnily enough, we have a song that made it on both of these two lists. That song is Adore, because Miss Smart picked that as her sex song, which, as I mentioned earlier, is completely understandable for obvious reasons. But we won't play it again. But I will say, as I mentioned, that when I hear that at a wedding, I'm like, oh, shit. They about to make out on a dance floor right now real quick. So,
right. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Not Adore. Here we go. Yeah, it's like, okay. But we also had Ronnie picked Insatiable. So let's hear a little of that from the Diamonds and Pearls album.
My
Jones, Martha. Oh yeah, it'd be like this.
I can't have a hug.
Well, we're going to stop there before it gets a little steamy on the Skype line here. Ooh, all right. You know what I thought of when you picked that song, and I was putting the list together for today. I was like, you know, that song always makes me think of the fact that Prince somehow made an old school vibe sound new again. Because that song almost, I mean, it could have been done in the 60s. It could have been done in the 50s in terms of the beats per minute and the melody that he used. But he transforms it into something completely different. Ronnie, what made you pick that for your sex song?
Well, I also like that he, you know, sort of all of this kind of taboos, you know, all these sort of taboo things in sex, you know, I want your love in my dirty little cage, and tonight we're going to video, and, you know, I'll show my, you show, you know, so all of these sort of taboo things that you probably only talk about with your girlfriends, but maybe even not them, like, okay, we can't tell nobody we did this. I like that he is singing about it. And again, you know me, that first line kills me. He's just like, you know, listen, no one that I've ever known knows how to handle my body like the way you truly do, you know. And so I think this album came out in maybe 91, maybe 92, 91. So I think I was probably either in eighth or ninth grade. And again, I just remember hearing the song and being like, oh, wait a minute. Like, whatever he's singing about, I think I want to do it. Like, whatever he's talking about, all of those things, like, I'm kind of interested in that. So where can I find some of that? So for me, that's why it's one of those songs, because it's like I can very much remember being, you know, 14, 15 years old and thinking, oh, my, there's something to this. And, like, it's sexy. Like, it's not gross anymore, right? When you first hear about sex, you're like, that's gross. But I remember hearing this song and thinking, this doesn't sound gross. I'm sure my father and mother would not like to hear that, love it.
Oh, such a good song. All right, we're going to move on to Brown and Bella's choice for a sexy song. Oh, I love this song.
Staring each other down.
That falsetto, though.
Yeah. On. Just as much as I want you. Let's stop fooling around.
Stop playing, girl. Stop playing.
Stop playing with me. All over, y'all.
Play with my all over. Mm. All over.
Mm. Bring out what's been in me far too long. Baby, you know that's all I've been dreaming of. To be, baby, like you've never done before.
Oh my, I'll let you do that. This one, go ahead, Brown and Bella, go ahead.
Listen, excuse me. with Do Me, like, the entire song is pure sex. Mm. Like, from the stare down, like, you know, it's about to go down, and he's like, don't play with me, girl. You know, like, it's going down. And I think, like, for me, I think that was always what, as I got into Prince more, this was the Prince I connected with more, like the sexual, like, because when I was young, you know, when I started listening to Prince, or when my mom was listening to Prince, I was young, so I didn't understand what all of these lyrics meant. Like, I, you know, when you're young or something, you could sing along. Like, I was born in 85, so Prince has been making music as long as I've been alive. Like, he's been making music since forever. So as I got older, I think the more like sexual sort of Prince is really what caught me more, like just coming into that and starting to eat. When you take a second read back through these lyrics, you get older, you're like, oh my gosh, like mm-hmm. Prince was on it, you know, yes. Like not just this song, but just in general, like this was, and there were some Prince songs like my mom wouldn't even play. Mm-hmm. Like she wasn't even playing them in the house. Like she was like, no, uh-uh. If it came up, she's like, no, we're gonna go past this. Like we're not to this. Like, and so I always knew that there was a side of Prince that like my mama wasn't showing me, but I didn't care enough at 7, 8, 9. Like, you know, once my mom was like, she wasn't listening, she wasn't gonna play it. Okay, whatever. But as I got older, I'm listening to these songs like, oh shit. Like, and I'm like, I'm with it, Prince. Okay. So then, you know, that's always been what sort of just drove me to Prince, just is the very sort of, he speaks about sex in such a raw way, like in almost as like the spiritual connection almost. Like if when he sings about sex, like you get some of that raw nasty sometimes, but he really has a way of making it seem almost spiritual, like a spiritual thing. And this song to me, like, it just, it connects to me.
It yeah, connects. I totally so hear that. I loved it. I could totally hear that. One other thing I always think about, and this is true of all the sex songs that we picked, is that he always was so about, you know, the connection with the person that he's talking about, and also on the sexual side of things, was so about female empowerment in all of his songs. It was always like, I want you to do stuff to me, I want to make you feel good. It was such a different way of talking about it. It wasn't this thing that the woman was supposed to be scared of or be unapproachable for women. And I love all of that, which actually brings me to the song that I chose as my sex song, which is Get Off. Here we go.
You ain't been given served. You say that you ain't you know what, and baby, who knows how long? It's time for me to say what's right when all I wanna do is wrong. Get off.
23 positions in a one night stand.
Get off.
I'll only call you after you say I can.
Get off.
Here I am.
Here I am. I got the jizz from a friend of yours named Vanessa Bett. She said you told her a fantasy that got her all wet. Something about a little box with a mirror and a tongue inside. What she told me then got me so hot I knew that we could slide. Get off.
23 positions in a one night stand.
Get off.
I'll only call you after if you say I can.
Get off. Let a woman be a woman and a man be a man. Get off.
If you want to, baby, here I am.
Here I am. Get off. 1, 2, 3, 9, little cutie, I ain't drinking. Let's go, Chris. I was just thinking, you trust me. What a ride. If you
you was thinking the same. We could continue outside. Lay your pretty body against the parking meter. Strip your dress down like I was stripping a Peter. Pause. I'm in joy. Let me show you, baby, I'm a talented boy.
Anyways, so I picked that song for a couple of reasons, but the very first two opening lines, I dare say they were life-changing for me, but I was in high school when this song came out. It was heavy rotation on the radio, heavy rotation on MTV. But he says, how can I put this in a way so as not to offend or unnerve? There's a rumor going all around that you ain't been getting served. And I remember thinking my high school self said, wait a minute, I'm supposed to be getting served? Like, just that concept alone, that as the woman, I was supposed to be getting served in these in sexual encounters. And I just remember being like, oh, shit, this is something else. And then we got Prince rapping, which I don't know. I just love it. And he's so good at it. And I actually was reading some stories from, I think it was Talib Kweli or somebody, that said he used to just like freestyle all the time with friends at parties and stuff. He would just drop a hot 16. So. I love that song. All right. So, coming into the final round of our, sing-alongs. Now, three of us picked the same song. So we're going to start with the one person who didn't pick that song, which is Miss Smart. She picked actually one of my favorite Prince songs all together. And one of my favorite Prince videos as well, which is Thieves in the Temple. So here we go. That's a great song. What made you pick that? Have you done sing-alongs with that before, Miss Martin?
I have sang along. I have danced along. That was one of the songs where I realized I like shaking my ass and singing out loud in public places. Nice. Yeah, I mean, when it was playing, I was literally sitting here like, okay, I probably shouldn't stand up because they're probably going to hear the mic moving. But yeah, that was 1990. I remember it like yesterday. Yeah, good times, good times.
So good. All right, so the other three of us picked, I don't know, arguably certainly one of Prince's most recognizable songs, Kiss. And I'm dancing, so
you don't have to be beautiful. You don't know. I just need your body, baby, from dusk till dawn. You don't need experience. Just leave it all up to me.
That song is so great. I remember the reason why I picked it was because I went to Spain in high school, like for spring break. And we went to, you know, a nightclub or something while we were there. And they were playing like all this like crazy European music. None of us knew the words to. Nobody knew what it was. And then they put Kiss on. And it was like the whole place erupted. And everybody, obviously, we all knew the song. And it was just, I just have that indelible moment of like, oh, everybody loves Prince, so it doesn't matter where you are. You're going to be getting on the dance floor when Kiss comes on. So how about you, Ronnie and Brian and Bella? What made you guys pick that one for the sing-along?
I remember when the song came out, and my mother, who is not a singer, but is a clown and likes to cut up, I remember her singing this in the car, like on the way to school in the morning or something, and she just loved this song. And, you know, I remember the line, you know, you don't have to watch Dynasty to have an attitude. And I remember my mom watching Dynasty. Whenever I hear this song, whenever I sing along to it, I just think about my mother singing to me on the way to school and just like yelling in the car this song, because really both of us like wait until the last maybe 10 seconds of the song when he's just screaming, you know, ain't no particular, you know, he's just, yeah, and you just like, we would just go crazy on that part. So for me, it's very much connected to, you know, just being in the car and my mom, and just, it's just a great sing-along song, you know. And then even with my children, like, they know this song. Like, when I told them Prince died, they were like, that's who sings Kiss. Like, we love that, you know. So it's just such a great song. Like, oh, we can all sing it. So it's like a family sing-along car song for me.
Love it. Love it.
Well, for me, it's like, if you don't know this song, like, I can't trust you. Like, if you can't sing along to this song, then I don't know what to make of you. Like, I
right.
It's so true.
It's like, who doesn't?
I'm not sure about you. You know?
Like, sure. Right, like, I want to know what happened to you. Yes. Like,
where you been?
How do you not know the words to this?
Yes. Yeah. Right, right. Are you sick? I mean, really, like, tell me. Share with me.
Right, like, help me help you. But also, like, this song also, like, it always reminds me of, like, my favorite white privileged fairy tale of all time. Like, this reminds me of Julia Roberts in the tub singing his headphones in Pretty Woman.
Yeah.
And like, even if you're just like, you're watching, you're like, I'm, you know, everybody loves this song. Like, yes. It's in the, you know, and she's, it don't have to be. And he walks up on her. He's like, what are you doing? And she's just chilling in the tub, yes. like jamming her heart out. And I'm like, Julia Roberts is me. That is me. You know, like, but it always reminds me of that. And it's also, like I said, just one of those songs that everyone knows. Everyone and their mama knows this song. If you can't sing along to Kiss, Prince, like Kiss by Prince, then, you know, it's not just my favorite Prince sing-along song. It's my favorite sing-along song of all time. Like, yeah. One of my favorite songs to sing. Like, everyone knows it. If you put this on, chances are everyone's going to sing with you. Like, yeah. It's just one of those songs.
So true. And it's, to me, the whole song is like nothing but shade the whole song through, which I just appreciate so much. I mean, the whole song, he's just shade. Act your age, not your shoe size. Hella
right.
Shade.
It's true. Like, it's quintessential shade. Prince. Like,
so
this is
Prince.
How he is.
Yes. Too cool for everything, but tells you don't have to be cool. I'm cool enough for us both. Ma'am. I love it. So that takes us through all of our choices. I guess we finished up this portion of the podcast just giving final thoughts about Prince's legacy, about I guess where we as a society, certainly as a community, go without him here. And why don't we start with you, Miss Smart?
My closing thought is that we need to keep music in the schools. Because you know, so few kids nowadays are playing instruments, are learning about just, you know, how musical notes go together and how different instruments go together. And, you know, we could very well be thwarting the next future musical genius by not having these programs readily available to our kids.
That's really great. How about you, Brian and Bella?
Well, I think going forward, I think she made a great point about that. Like, you know, kids don't get as much
exposure to music as they used to. But also, I think just with Prince, I think not only will Prince live on for just his, he made so much music. There's, you know, he'll live on through that, but also just through the way that he gave to the world in terms of technology with kids and giving to children and doing some of his, you know, some of the philanthropy things that he's done or that he did, man. I'm having a hard time talking about Prince in the past tense. Like, I,
it's very difficult. Yeah.
It's very difficult. But just being remembered for those type of things as well. He lived a full life, and let's not forget, like, he introduced us to some baddies. Like, let's not forget to some bad black chicks and some bad baddies, you know, some beautiful women, and he's given us so much in terms of, you know, he gave so much of himself in the music. You got to see so many different faces, so many of his faces through his music. And I think that's one of the biggest things that will live on for him. And I hope and that live on in how he's influenced other artists. Yeah. Like, just listening to some of his songs, you know, and because he passed, people have probably listened to even more of his songs. And I'm sure that you can hear, you know, the way he's influenced music today. Like, you don't just hear Prince in Prince songs. You hear Prince in a lot of people's songs.
Yeah.
So he'll live on forever through that, through just the way he touched so many people with his music and with everything that he's done, that he did.
Absolutely. Ronnie, how about you?
I think for me, the big thing is making sure that, you know, as a community, that we don't let people whitewash Prince. Mm. I think that is one of the things that when you look at his life and you look at things he said and you know, this whole idea, and again, someone tweeted this whole idea of transcending race, and which means like that you overcome your race or you're bigger than your race or you're better than the people in your race. You know, that was never something he was about. And so for me, it's really important to remember people the way they were, you know what I'm saying? Like, and not to be, I mean, my mom always says this, you know, when people die, let's not make them saints, right? So sometimes somebody can be the meanest old person in the whole world and a terrible person, but they die and you say, oh, but they were so sweet. No, that's not who they were. Like, let's be real. So, for example, you know, Prince was, you know, he was a black man and, you know, he lived his life and he empowered black women and he empowered women. So all of these things about who he was as a man, as a black man, as a musician, I think they matter. And my fear is always that, you know, we turn him into, or we let people turn him into like this sort of like, oh, he was just, he didn't see color. And like, stop, like, stop right there. We're not doing that. We're not going there. So for me, that's the important part, because I feel like sometimes in music, what we're missing is too many of our artists are afraid to speak about black lives and about activism and things like that. And so what happens is it's like, well, they're not talking about it. And, you know, the people before us didn't talk about it. So why should we? And I'm like, no. The artists who came before you, they talked about it too, you know, and just making sure that message is being passed on to younger, you know, musicians and younger generations as well.
Very, very awesome. And, you know, you guys said all the things that I was thinking. One thing that always stuck out for me, though, about Prince was that he remained such an integral part of his community in Minneapolis. And I think it's such a rarity to see somebody of his stature, caliber, and success continue to be connected to the community that raised them, that they were a part of in their early years. And I think it says so much about his character and how he felt about people and how important it was to have people around him that that he was comfortable with. And I think, you know, that's, to me, that's why it's so surprising to me having lost him like this, because I feel like he was so vibrant and such a huge, you know, he wasn't a recluse. He was private, yes, but he was incredibly engaged with people, had parties at his house all the time in Minneapolis. And I know that everyone there is feeling a particular loss in their community. And then, you know, as Ronnie said about, and actually all of you, I think, mentioned his philanthropic nature. I mean, as far as the movement for Black Lives, he was one of the very first people to donate financially to the Black Lives Matter Network when it was formed in 2013, continually supported them, gave money to so many Black-led organizations around this country, and with want for no praise. He didn't want anybody to know about it. So I'm hopeful that more of those stories can start to come out and people can really start to see a very three-dimensional person emerge from the stories that people have to share about their interactions with him and how much he meant to them and what he did for them. So that's what I'm hopeful for. And I think we're already seeing that, you know, so many people coming out and talking about the things that he did for them. And, you know, glad we were able to share this little bit of time and play some of his music here on the show. And now we will transition from one icon to another. This Saturday night, Beyonce dropped the, no pun intended, motherload of Lemonade on us via an hour-long, I wouldn't even call it a music video, but hour-long art film that introduced visuals and the obviously audio for her new album, and her tour launches in just 2 days. So it couldn't have come at a better time. So let's just go around and talk about how'd you watch, first of all, and then your initial reaction, like just having watched it. And why don't we start with you, Miss Mark?
Okay, so as I said before, I was unfortunately not in formation. And it's not my fault. I was on my calendar. The conversation was too good, but, and we did have the TV on, but it was on mute. We were playing Prince. So you guys can see how this could all go wrong, right? So when Serena came on the television, all the guys were like, now, wait a minute. Is that? And so we started watching from that point, and I think we watched up to, at least at that place, I watched up to Daddy. Then I came home because I didn't really get it. I think, you know, once I saw it from the beginning, I got it. But I came home, I watched it again, and then I got caught up in this never-ending loop on HBO and just kept watching it over and over and over and over again. It was wonderful. My life has changed.
Mine too. How about you, Ronnie? Where'd you watch it, and an initial kind of first thought?
Yeah, I was, once again, I think this was what happened on the last podcast too. I was at a dance competition with my daughter, and it was at the Westin Galleria here in Houston. So it's a hotel kind of within the mall. And so she didn't get out of dance until like 10 o'clock that night. Of course, I'm like, oh my God, Lemonade is coming on. What am I going to do? So of course I had Wi-Fi in my room or whatever, and we got back to the room and she ate and she was like, okay, mommy, I'm going to read for a little while. And I was like, okay. And I was thinking, well, I'll start watching it now. So I started watching it like the first few minutes. I think maybe there was a cuss word or two. And I was like, okay, I'm going to wait till she falls asleep. So she fell asleep and I put it on and I was just enmeshed. Like, just, of course, I immediately recognized, you know, some of the poetry and the images. And I was just like, oh my God, I cannot believe that she really, really, really did this. Like, that she really, like, went there, you know, that she, like, she did that, right? Like, she did that.
Yes.
And, you know, of course, we knew how bold Formation was, so I was expecting, you know, this to be bold, but not even this bold. Like, I really was not. So yeah. And then, you know, same way, just caught in a loop. I just kept, cause I was watching it on my HBO app over and over and over and playing it over and over and over. And like, you know, yeah, just could not get enough of it. Still can't.
So I know, still can. I'll watch it again right now. Brown and Bella, how about you?
Well, I watched it, at home. I watched it on time. I was in formation since February. When she released her orders, I made sure that it wasn't going to be nothing on the schedule that was going to interfere with me watching Lemonade on time when it aired. So let me tell you, I was on an emotional roller coaster. Like, they sold this so well. I was like, am I watching like a divorce letter? Like, like, what am I watching? Like, it didn't even, I was just so, and then I saw Jay-Z's face and I was like, okay. So he's in here looking sorry. Okay, good. Jay-Z in here looking sorry. The, you know, the Hive can breathe. Like, because I'm like, oh, what is going on? I felt like, that the Mr. Crab meme where he's like, what's going on? That's how I felt like watching through the beginning of it. And so, you know, I just went on this roller coaster of emotions. It was just so good. And as I just like the other ladies here, like once it went off, I just couldn't, I really couldn't even gather myself. Like I was just like in an emotional like pit of stuff. Cause I'm just like, this is what? But everything as I'm watching it, it was just so beautiful. Everything was so beautifully done. I was just entranced with it, but I was feeling so many different things. I had to watch it. Each time I watch it, I feel like I feel different. And how can I put this? Let me slow down. Every time I watch it, I feel like it piques a different part of my like emotionally. It brings out different. I'm drawn in at different parts.
Yeah.
Each time, you know, and I kind of key in on things in specific songs each time, or you know, just like a specific visual comes and I'm like, wow, I didn't even catch that the third, fourth, fifth, sixth time I watched it. So it's an amazing, she put together an amazing piece of work. Like it is something that I've just been consuming basically almost on a 24-hour loop. With a few, you know, I stopped for Game of Thrones and and things like that. But pretty much as much as I've been awake, I've been listening to it or watching it somehow. So it's just, it's so amazing. I just can't get enough of it. But it is, she did that.
She really did. I also was not in formation, but I did have a good reason. We went to see Fantasia and Anthony Hamilton in concert Saturday night. So I had tickets to something and I couldn't partake, but I did watch it as soon as we got home. On Sunday, we went to Chicago for the show and came back Sunday afternoon. And I was like, okay, bye, Drew. I got to go watch for Lemonade. So go away. And I was like, so good. I stayed away from social media. I didn't want to listen to it. I didn't want to hear anything about it because I wanted to experience it the way she wanted us to. And she had the Lemonade premiere first, and then she released the album, which signaled to me that I was supposed to watch this shit before I listened to it. So I did that. And I watched it straight through. I was just remember sitting there mesmerized, and two things popped into my head. The first was that this should take 2 years to make. So, you know, I know it was a long time since the last album, but in seeing what she actually put together, I was like, yeah, that looks like 2 years worth of work when you look at how detailed and intricate the visuals were, and then pairing that with these really complex songs that she has amassed in this album. And then the second thing I thought was that, you know, we're really watching the progression of such an amazing artist, not just musically, but just artist period. We've seen her have really catchy songs. We've seen her have albums that are really well-written songs. We saw with the last album, we saw amazing visuals that match with these songs. And now we see her pull an entire movie length worth of story into an album format. And I don't even know what to say about how amazing and empowering and beautiful and wonderful it is. And I just know I'm going to be watching it forever and ever and ever, because it's every time I see it, like today I was watching it earlier and I don't know, there was like this one scene with like a watch. And mm-hmm. I was like, what time is that watch at? Like, I wanted to like stop it and like write down that must mean something. So all of these things that just start like going through my head. So those are my first initial thoughts. So obviously we're dealing with a lot of huge themes in this album and in the visual piece that goes along with it. What were some of the overarching themes that you guys noticed or that you picked up on and have kind of stayed with you now we had it for a few days?
Anyone?
Anybody?
It just the womanness of it, if that's a word. Mm-hmm. It made me aware that it made me feel good to see that she put forth this amount of effort for us. With regard to the visuals, I saw this information. I really, really appreciate how she weaves regular people into it. And those people, I don't know how they shot that or whatever, but for each of those people, they captured like their spirit in the little shots they had of them.
Yeah. I think not having their voices, that was so huge.
Yes.
And really allowed their faces to really tell the story. I'm thinking of the one woman who has her hair curled like perfectly. Yes. She has her hair, and when she turns around, like that look on her face, you're just like, ooh, I got her. Like I got her for real. Got her. Oh, so good. Obviously there's father-daughter, daddy issues. We've got love and loss. We have infidelity, but not just on a personal level, but on a, I think, a macro level. Ijeoma Olowu wrote this great piece about how the album and Lemonade itself is not about just infidelity and just Jay-Z. You know, it's about this idea, and this is what I took as an overarching theme, is what we as Black women go through in this world. And I don't see, you know, this infidelity thing as just a romantic nature, but, you know, we're the ones that march and nobody marches for us. We're the ones that have to clean up after there's blood on the streets. We're the ones that have to pick up the pieces of families when our men and our loved ones are locked up. You know, those are the things I just continually grab from it. And when she takes you through all of these different emotions she has, it felt to me it was almost like, you know, sometimes we feel as though we have multiple personalities as Black women, or we're forced to. And I feel like she just honored all of them. That's how that was the theme I took from the whole thing. Oh, God.
Oh, yeah. Like, I think that was a sort of like touched on sort of what the way I kind of summed it up when I was tweeting about it. I was like, you know, this is like an ode to Black womanhood. Like, you know, not just, you know, of course, like you can separate the songs from the imagery, but you can't at the same time. Mm-hmm. But in terms of, if you just look at the imagery was just so rich and Black. It was so Black. Like, of course, you know, she's singing these songs and they're very, you know, the themes of the songs themselves are very universal, you know, love, loss, and sort of redemption and coming back together and triumph, you know, basically. Mm-hmm. But when you get to the imagery of it, like, and I think that's why she was forcing us to consume it together. Mm. Because if you only listen to the music, you wouldn't get this sort of rich background that she built for the music. You know, it you lay the music over top of sort of this, the backdrop of the visuals and everything that she put together, a whole, how can I put, I'm trying to look for the words, like just a whole, Black ass, in ode to Black womanhood. Everything about it was just connected to, like you said, what we as Black women sort of go through. But that's not, if you just listen to the songs, you don't get it, but it makes complete sense when you put it together. Like, now when I'm listening to the songs, even if I'm not watching it, I'm seeing it the way that she wanted me to. Mm-hmm. I think in a way that we don't get maybe with other artists, but because she gave she created this world that she put the music on top of. And I think the world was so deep and so rich and sort of so true to, and so reflective and true to our experience, that it's almost like, it's like when people are saying that it spoke to Black women, that it's sort of for us, you can't deny it. You can't deny that those visuals are for us. Like, and especially the way she put it together with the little things that are in the visual, but not on the album. So, you know, the poetry's not on the album, and in the song with Malcolm X, when she plays it on the video on the movie, basically, that Malcolm X clip isn't on the album.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just the way that she wove that universe to lay the songs on, I think, is just something that the level of creativity that takes is not something that that artists are kind of tapping into every day. That's a level of artistry, a level up from what we're used to seeing really from anyone that's out right now, that, or anyone that especially now that Prince is gone. Like, you know, we lost Prince this week, and then we get this beautiful sort of, you know, this beautiful artistry from someone who, as we're mourning, saying like, who's this creative now? Like, who can do this? You know? Mm-hmm. And Beyonce steps up with something that she's been working on for 2 years. It's like, this is just, we're really seeing something that we've never really gotten to see quite this way. I mean, and it was on fucking HBO. Like, everyone who could get out of whatever they were going to be able to do on Saturday, they were glued to their television. And if they couldn't, they came home and watched it and still got enthralled in that 24-hour playback that they were playing.
Absolutely.
So no one but Beyoncé has the chops to do what she did. And she pulled it off in a way that I don't think anyone would have given her credit for before that. And I'm a Beyoncé fan. I am in the Hive. But, like, this is not something I was ever expecting her to do. It was not something I could have ever imagine, like, she and I needed it, but she knew what we needed as an artist. She gave us what we needed, and maybe not, you know, what we want, because everyone's listening to, you know, you get a single here, a single there with someone that, you know, you might not ever hear from them again, but it's popping, you know, it's popping for right now.
Sure,
but Beyoncé gave us a whole album, and she forced us to consume the whole album with the imagery and everything that she wanted to give us. And we don't get that anymore.
Mm. Ronnie, how about you?
I think, you know, initially my very beginning thoughts were the poetry, right, of Warsan, Shire. And I love her poetry. And so I remember watching but paying attention to the words and like, oh God, she's saying this, she's saying that. And then of course I'm looking at how beautiful Beyoncé looks, and I'm the same way. I'm in the Beehive. I'm from Houston. So I'm like, hey, since she came on the scene, I'm team Beyoncé all day. So I'm looking at her and I'm like, oh my gosh, she just looks so beautiful. And then when I thought, sort of once we got to the end, is I thought, you know, the Black woman as the artist is so just tremendous. And I say that as a totally biased person because I'm raising an artist, right? So I have a daughter who's a aspiring ballerina. So watching, I think, is it Michaela the Prince that's in the documentary?
Yep,
I can't remember.
Yep.
So watching her dance, and then of course watching Beyoncé, who is sort of the curator almost. That's what I saw her as. Like, she's the curator, right? She's put together all these pieces for us to view to show the Black woman as an artist. And sort of to look at the rawness of who Black women are. And so I loved that part of it. And immediately, as soon as it was over, I felt fiercely protective of it because it's art. Mm. And because I can watch my child and her art and watch her sort of evolve and want to protect that, right? And maybe in a little bit of a way, I fancy myself an artist as a writer and how sacred your art is. And like, yes, it's up for critique, but like by Black people, you know what I'm saying? Like that was my first thought, was like, if anybody who is not a Black woman has something to say about this, like, I'm like, for real, it's not. And I believe that my first post about Lemonade was, all the people that don't understand it, it's not for you, period, full stop. Like, that's it. Right. So it was almost like, it's like when you have a baby, like as soon as you have it, you're like, oh my God, I have to protect this with all of my heart and soul and mind. I felt that. I was fiercely in love with Serena Williams being there. Mm. Because I grew up as an athlete, and watching her big, strong, muscular, beautiful body be on display and just so I can look back at it. I think that everyone's on the internet.
I'm gonna play that in a second. I'm gonna play her whole piece in a second.
Like that is so, like, for me, that was so important. And I know there's been talk about, you know, black women's bodies that Beyoncé has ignored in this particular piece, and we can talk about that as well. But as a woman who has a lot of muscles and who has a big muscular butt and big hamstrings and thighs and arms, and like, hey, if I just think about lifting weights, I'm gonna get swole, right? But to see Serena and like that the athlete is also the artist, like that for me, Ronnie, who been a tomboy all my life playing sports or whatever, that was like, oh my, oh, like I'm in that group too. Like I, you know, even the athletes, like we're there, right? And then also the secrecy of it all, right? Mm. So that was the first thing I thought, was like, nobody knew about this. Like you, like, and I believe that is obviously her new thing, right? I mean, I think that with the last album, we sort of saw her roll it out, you know, in the middle of the night, you know, made us all lose up all of our memory on our phone because we're trying to download it. But But I just remember thinking, you know, she keeps her hand close to her chest, you know, and she shows you what she wants to show you when she wants to show you. And I just love that. Like, I just, and I said this in a piece I wrote that, you know, and I've seen this maybe as a meme, and it says, you know, people who, let me see, maybe it says good storytellers or maybe even private people have sort of mastered the art of telling you very little and making you think you know a whole lot. And then, so of course, that was the beauty of it, because then the other part of it is, again, I teach writing. So the beauty of the storytelling of it all was that she gave us just enough to make us wonder, but not too much, but you're just like, oh, like, really? She just did us like that? Like, she, like, and I said last week, she pimping us. Y'all know that, right? She just, oh, yeah, lemonade next week. Drop all your plans. So I loved that. And then just like everybody said, the theme of womanhood. I love the theme of young and old women.
Yes.
I loved that. I loved that this sort of a feeling of the torch being passed. That there are the women who came before us and the girls who will come after us, and sort of our job to everyone in the spectrum, right? If you consider yourself somewhere in the middle of the spectrum, then the responsibility you have to Blue Ivy, right? And the responsibility that you have to my daughter, that we all have, and the responsibility that I have to your grandmother and to your great auntie and to Trayvon's mother. Like, we all own that responsibility as Black women, and that you don't just sort of exist. You're not by yourself. That was the other thing. Like, this sort of weight of the world that Black women carry, you know, yes, we carry it, but we're also not alone in it. So that really kind of stuck out for me, because I really also walked away from it thinking that, you know what, we are so the shit, and I am so the shit, and I'm not the shit by myself. Like, I got all my sisters in me, and we just the shit together. And that's pretty much it.
So true. We're going to go song by song, but I'm going to just play Evelyn from the internet's reaction, because I just thought it was so perfect.
Yeah. Beyonce, so what are you going to say at my funeral now that you've killed me?
Hi, I'm Kelly Pickler, and the CMA Award for Best Female Vocalist goes to Beyonce.
Hate who brought it to me, Evelyn.
Beyonce was giving me Waiting to Exhale meets Their Eyes Were Watching God. Eve's Bayou meets Lisa Left Eye Lopez. She was giving me Yon La Fix My Life, but with better boobs, better advice, actually fixing lives. She was giving me 1 Corinthians Love Is, and then Tina Turner What's Love Got to Do With It. She was giving me Set It Off meets That Circle of Hell Where the Weeknd Lives. I hope he's okay. She gave you Idlewild. She gave you Nina Simone, Nefertiti, Venus de Milo. Beyonce pulled out the VHS tapes, gave us the past. She called on Trayvon Martin, Mike Brown, and Eric Garner's mother to give us the present, okay? And then she surrounded us with visuals of the Black future, Quavonjanae and Blue Ivy, the Black future of Mandela and Zendaya. Beyonce called James Blake out of whatever forest in Narnia he resides in to give you British Erin Neville tease. She called Serena Williams, one of the world's best athletes, and you can fight me on that, just to look back at it. She said, hey, Serena, I know you're busy, but I'm working on something and it needs a little je ne sais quoi. And your thighs are the only thing that speak that language. Are you free Wednesday? She's giving me candomblé. She's giving me Yoruba. She's giving me South with an F. Beyonce said, in case the imagery thus far is lost on you, let me insert the voice of Malcolm X to help me communicate what I'm trying to say. I'm blackity, black, black, black. Listen, me and my girls are going to book a retreat right now in the Texas Hill Country. We're going to wear our hair product free. If you got baby hairs, wear that. If you got afros, wear that. We're going to soak some greens. We're going to walk around barefoot. We are going to be dressed in the latest doily fashions, and you can stay mad.
That's right.
Damn
Wouldn't
right.
Tell me in the comments. Follow me.
All right. I'll put that link in the show notes. But I thought Evelyn, she just broke it all the way down so we could jump into the kind of song by song breakdown and just give our thoughts on each of them. So obviously, the Lemonade opens with Pray You Catch Me. And I don't know. I just remember when it opened, you know, it shows the image of her that's from the album cover, the teaser that they did for Lemonade. And I swear I heard a lion roaring. I don't know if anybody else heard it, but that sound came out to me and I was like, oh, there's a lion. And then it almost was like a flash forward, and then it went back to the beginning. You almost could hear the tape rewinding in terms of the visual that was going to be displayed. Let's play just a second or two of Pray You Catch Me, and then we'll talk about what we thought about it. On Pray You Catch Me. I'm gonna let it play in the background very low for us.
I love the sweetness of her voice on this song. It's the perfect first song, right? You know, so you the movie starts and you hear her singing this, and so for me that was one of the first things I noticed, was just how sweetly she's singing. And again, y'all know me, beginnings matter, right? Mm-hmm. She pulls you in with that. You know, that sweetness right there. She could be singing, you know, the ingredients to shampoo, and you're just like, yes, girl, sing. Yes.
I love the beginning part. It was almost like a breathing exercise. Like I was getting ready to do something. You know, when you're doing like acting exercises or anything like that, or going into like yoga and you start like a breathing exercise. That's what it felt like. She was prepping us. I was like, oh shit, stuff is about to happen, y'all. Like all of that was running through my head. Oh my God. And then I love the stripped down, like the visuals in this piece were so stripped down. Like she's wearing a hoodie with the zipper on it, which, can I get one of those? Somebody let me know where I can get that, because I like that. Like that zip, the whole thing zips apart. I'm here for that. There's like ruins. It's a lot of military stuff, which I thought was actually a theme that carried out throughout the entire piece. She had a lot of those visuals of like undergrounds and forts and, you know, things that have ruins and things like that. And then even when they show her on the stage, it's very plain. Just a red curtain, the bare light bulbs, very short stage. You know, it's very bare. And also her hair is not shown at all in this piece. It's covered either in a head wrap or the hoodie the whole time. I thought that was really interesting because we all know how her hair be playing a part in everything all the time. Miss Smart, Brown and Bella, what were your thoughts on this?
Well, so with the words, it gave me words to something I've experienced before, where you know something is going on, but you don't want to address it. So you're hoping circumstances align themselves so that it's somehow put out there without you taking that step forward. So she's praying that he catches her listening and has to address it. Yeah. And she's praying that she catches him maybe whispering so that it confirms what her intuition is telling her. Like she's not strong enough to just go with what she already knows.
Yeah. And also just to pray you catch me, she leaves the end off too, where it's like, I'm falling here. Mm-hmm. I pray you catch me, right? Oh, right. Gosh.
Oh, yeah, that's a good
so
one.
Strong, so strong. All that whole, those three lines are so amazing. Such a great turn of phrase and everything. And I do agree, her voice is beautiful, just soft, so soft on this song. So pretty.
And she gave us so many voices in this, like,
we're going to get into this. She literally did, like, I don't know, the history of music up on this shit. I don't know.
Right.
And I think she does that, too, and you don't know what to expect, right? Mm. So she starts off with that song, and you're like,
So is this going to be all ballads? Is it going to be all just sweet like this? Is it, you know, like, where are you taking me, Beyonce, Giselle, Knowles, Carter? What are you doing to me? Where are we going? But it's so sweet that you just, because that was another thought I had. I'm like, is she just going to be like, you know, singing really sweet? Is that what this is? I mean, you're just so confused, you know, like, you're like, where am I going?
But I also think, like, the sweetness of her voice sort of contrasts with the heaviness of yes. what she's actually singing. Yes, because she's singing really softly, but, like, the subject matter, like I pray you catch me. Like, what's actually going on is not soft at all. It was almost, for me, like, eerie. Mm-hmm. Because I felt like the hammer was going to be dropping at any time. I just knew in my soul, like in my soul being was stirred, and I was like, okay, wait. No, I knew that it wasn't going to all be like this. Like, I was like, she's about to drop something on our head, and like,
we about to be in it.
And it's about to go down, yes. right? So, you know, because like she said, she was singing really sweetly, and it took a little bit for my ear to actually get to the words of what she was saying. Like, I'm just like, mm-hmm. you know, like singing, you know, feeling the melody. And I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah, it's very timid.
Talk about some real shit here.
Mm-hmm.
It's about to go down.
Yes.
And then
she leaps off a fucking building right quick and into some water, y'all.
Leaps off a fucking building, and you're like, what the hell is going on?
The whole piece of her in the water is so beautiful. And the piece of poetry she does there, it's the most, I would say, demonstrative. She has several lines that she almost shouts out, like, really, really good. And it's so pretty. I don't even know how they did that, quite frankly, like logistically, with her hair being perfect. There's one part where it looks like her hair forms a necklace around her neck. Mm-hmm. I don't even know what to say about it. It's so beautiful. But in between Pray You Catch Me and Hold Up, which is the next song. And so she also had these words that showed up. So attached to Pray You Catch Me was intuition. And obviously she's got the intuition. Some shit is going down. And she leaps off the building. But in between these, she says, you remind me of my father, a magician. Able to exist in two places at once, and all of that imagery that goes along with that. And obviously we all know, like, water usually visually means rebirth, transformation, personal growth. It's always like a path to something. So we see her jump into water, and then the doors open. Water gushes out, and here comes Beyonce. I mean, As soon as the doors opened, I said, oh my God, it's Ocean. Like, it was the first thing I thought of. I was like, okay. I see where this is going. Kind of. Like, I remember thinking, oh, this isn't for white folks. As soon as she opened those doors, I was like, oh, this is about to be some black shit. This whole thing is going to be some black shit. And I thought, they not ready for all this.
Like, you knew it was kind of like, oh,
immediately
shit.
I was like, oh boy, okay, Beyonce, I got you now. And we'll talk at the end, but one of the things that really has had me thinking all day today is the fact that she gave us the end. She teased us with the end of this journey with no context whatsoever, and then gave us everything before it afterwards. And there's something amazing about that, because she allowed us to form all of these assumptions about formation and what it meant and where it fit into things. And then seeing it in the context of this whole album, it's a whole different song. But let's give a listen to Hold Up.
They don't love you like I love you. Step down, they don't love you like I love you. Can't you see there's no other man above you? What a wicked way to treat the girl that loves you. Oh, love, they don't love you like I love you. Hold down, they don't love you like I love you. Something don't feel right, because it ain't right. Especially coming up after midnight.
I smell your secrets, and I'm not too perfect to ever feel this worthless. How did it come down to this? Scrolling through your call list. I don't wanna lose my pride, but I'ma fuck me up a bitch. Know that I kept it sexy, and know I kept it fun. It's something that I'm missing, maybe my head for one. What's worst, looking jealous or crazy? Jealous or crazy? Or like being walked all over lately? Walked all over lately, I'd rather be crazy. Oh, like, they don't love you like I love you. Slow down, they don't love you like I love you. Back up, they don't love you like I love you. Step down, they don't love you like I love you. Can't you see there's no other man above you? What a wicked way to treat the girl that loves you. Hold up, they don't love you like I love you. Slow down, they don't love you like I love you. Let's imagine for a moment that you never made a name for yourself, a master wealth. They had you labeled as a king. Never made it out the cage, still out there moving in them streets. Never had the baddest woman in the game up in your sheets. Would they be down to ride now? They used to hide from you, lie to you, but y'all know we were made for each other. So I find you and hold you down. Missing, say, hold up, they don't love you like I love you.
Yeah. So she dropped that one next. Again, beautiful imagery, and I think the biggest shock or surprise, but her bat named Hot Sauce made its first made its appearance in this piece of the movie. Which obviously adds a whole other level of meaning to that phrasing of hot sauce in my bag from Formation. What were you guys' thoughts on this song and obviously the visuals that go along with it?
I think, for me, I've always said this, and maybe there's a little bit of sense of pride when I say it, or even like, you know, maybe people who do this are somehow I'm better than them, but, and that's not what I mean to say, but I'll explain it. So I've never like had a physical altercation over a boy or a man, right? Like I'm not going to fight you over no dude. Like, and just, it ain't that serious to me. Right. And I've been married for 17 years and like, I love my man. And even still, I'm like, I mean, if he want to go, I'm probably not going to fight you. However, I have been in public. I have been in public and we've been somewhere and one time it even happened at church. So pray for me. But somebody was like, just getting real familiar, you know, like, mm-hmm. And I'm standing right there and I'm like, bitch, I will fucking drag you. Do you hear me? Like, we got a fucking 401k together. Like we got a hot, like, I was so fucking lay you out right now. Like, you don't know the shit I done put up with him and the shit he done put. You, if you don't back your ass up, I swear for Jesus, I'm gonna fuck me up a bitch. Like, tonight. Like, baby, you got bail money?
Right the fuck now.
Right the fuck now, because you too fucking close. Like, my husband has a beard. It's a really nice beard. Girl, we were somewhere and somebody was like, Lalo, I just love your beard. I just want to touch it. I said, and you won't have no fingers is what you won't have. So, like, for me, this song, like, hearing, like, what's worse, jealous or crazy? Mm. One of my friends, Dr. Brian Hodgkins, he's a professor at the University of Utah, he was quoting this. He said, be asked what's worse, being jealous or crazy. He said, you know what? When it's your soulmate, when it's the one that matters to you, it don't matter. Be both. Mm-hmm. Be both of them. So, for me, I was like, you know what, B? I ain't even mad at you. She was like, look, I'm going to fuck me up a bitch. I'm just like, I felt that, like, in my spirit. Like, I felt like it was a little bit of church for me, like, when she said that. So, yeah, I was feeling it. Hold up.
Well, I like that. So, for me, she said, jealous or crazy. And then she follows that with, or walked all over
lately,
or something like that.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Right. So, she's saying, these are the three choices I have. And I'm making a conscious choice to show the hell out.
Yes.
Because you probably won't understand the other things. And for a lot of women, that may be very validating, because what happens when a woman reacts naturally, what she called first, crazy. When she looks suspicious at a guy, oh, she's just jealous. No, intuition has told me that something ain't right here. And
I probably been ignoring it.
Exactly.
She keep coming back and I've been acting like I let you walk all over me because I wasn't trusting myself. But bitch, mm-hmm.
right.
going, damn.
Mm-hmm. But you're going to lose some teeth in a minute messing with me is all I'm going to say. I mean, I told y'all about the muscles, so I'm just saying. some teeth.
And anger is a natural emotion. I mean, anger is a natural... Right. It's just natural. And for people to try to convince women that we're, like, crazy for having a natural reaction is just mind-blowing to me.
Yes. For sure. Like, they try to convince us that it's, like, unladylike to be angry. But, like, bitch, stop making, like, we got feelings out here, too. And anger is valid, and you're going to let us show it. But I think what struck me the most about this song was when she digs pretty directly into Jay's ass in that second verse.
Yo, that verse is hot. Man, fire when for his ass.
Basically, what she said to him in a nutshell was, like, remember when you said the like girls used to call you ugly and wouldn't touch me? Like, remember those girls? Yeah, nigga, they on you now because you're Jay-Z, but bitch, I'm Beyonce and I love Sean. Like, let's not forget all those girls, them when them wavy light skin chicks was not liking you. Like, you know what I mean? Which is, you know, which are lyrics from his own songs, which I think was even more like, nigga, people was like, oh, well, she wasn't talking. Maybe she was just talking about that. I was like, no, she's talking to Jay-Z. Like, she's using his words from his songs and, like, turned them against him in this little cute sort of reggae, like, hold up, they don't love you like I love you, meaning, like, these girls love Jay-Z and you forgot who I am, that I done came to scoop you know, I remember they called you ugly and I was the one that loved you when they were calling you ugly. And how dare you really do this to me? And she, I think that's how it gets back into the next song, which you're going to talk about. But it's really like, okay, she was like, wait a minute. Who am I? You got me fucked up. Would I rather be jealous or crazy? You know what? I'm going to be crazy because you got me fucked up. Do you know who you are? Do you remember who you are? And then song number three, she lets him know who the fuck she is.
Yeah.
Like, as we get into, you know, more into that, but that's what struck me the most. Like, as I'm listening to it, she's singing it, and this beautiful, like, again, Beyonce's beautiful voice, she's singing these, you know, the beautiful melody of it, but, like, she's talking so much real.
Yeah.
So much realness, and then she's beating everything with that bat. And
that
I'm
bat,
just,
you know, and, on her and face. And then there was, like, the flames. There was flames going behind her when she hit at certain times with the bat. And, you know, Ocean, the Yoruba goddess, she's, you know, always wearing yellow. She's associated with water and also governs over love and sexuality. But the other thing that she's also been scorned. She's the one that people go to when they want to seek revenge. And in imagery, she's always smiling when she enacts revenge on people. So I just felt like Beyonce was this goddess, like, for real, come to life in this entire clip of the movie. I'm going to keep calling it a movie because that's what it seems like to me.
Yeah, it definitely played like a movie. For sure. Like, for sure.
Yeah. And then Diplo produced this one. So obviously there's a, you know, reggae tinge to it, as we all mentioned. Other thoughts? Did we miss anybody? I think we did. Maybe. Who did we miss?
No, I just said that she upgraded him and they both know it.
Word. Right.
Ain't that the truth?
She legitimized him because he had some business dealings, but there is no way that he would ever have stepped foot in the White House the way he has without that by his side.
We were meeting Obama together. You fucking up.
Oh, yes. And so the name of the song, the title of the song, is called Hold Up, but she used the word intuition or is that denial? I can't remember which it is. Hold on. Let me make sure I get it right. That's denial. So denial was the word that she had up before Hold Up came up. Next, we have Anger with Don't Hurt Yourself, which I would say is the most ratchet tune on the album, I think. We'll see. Here we go. Jack White's on this.
Sorry.
Oh, yeah. Sorry's ratchet as hell, too. You're right.
Don't hurt yourself.
All right. Actually, you're right. Sorry is the most ratchet one. This is the rockiest one, I would say. The most, like, rock song on the album.
Girl, on this song, when she looks at the camera and she says, bad motherfucker, God complex, I was, like, on my feet, jumping up and down, like that line right there. And then you can't recreate it. Like, it's like you said, she comes off of Hold Up to this song to be like, Negro, do not play with me.
Word. And then her wordplay.
Keep your money. I got my own. Like, I'm straight. Like, it ain't even all of that for me. You know, like, she's really just like, seriously, we ain't got to be together. Like, for real.
She has all this great wordplay. She says, beautiful mane and I'm the lion. Beautiful man, why you lying? I was like, come on, Beyonce. Like, I don't even know. The whole album is good, but her lyrics in this album are unlike any that we heard from her before now. I don't know. Obviously, she went through some shit, and that will always make you write amazing stuff. But I just so impressed with all of that and the quality of the production. And obviously, they don't actually play the Malcolm X speech in here where he says the most disrespected person in America is a black woman. And so on, but on the visual movie, they do say that. They have the actual play out, which is really good, and kind of drives home this disrespect, unprotected, neglected black woman that she's speaking out for. And that's where we see these larger themes continue to bubble up. Like, yeah, she's maybe talking about some personal experiences, but she's extrapolating to all of our experiences at the same time. I don't even know. I love the
imagery of her, like when they were sort of in the it had a really gritty sort of feel to the way the whole video was shot. But I really liked when you know, those shots of her when she was, you know, like he said, singing sort of directly to the camera. But I loved, like, okay, my boyfriend does like graffiti. He goes out in the middle of the damn night and writes on shit. Like this is his thing. So I'm watching it with him, and the first thing he's like, babe, is, you know, he's like, she got tags in the back. So, like, all of the, like, the graffiti that's on, you know, on the back.
Yeah.
He was just, you know, for him, he's looking at it like, oh, my God, they just got so much love. Like, you know, and they're in the Beyonce video. And it's just, like, these little things that, that probably, you know, someone who pays less attention to detail and sort of crafting, again, this universe that, you know, and it almost looked like, you know, so she was in a city, these places she was in the city, but then as you go along to sort of heal herself, she goes into the country. But these city shots for me, you know, when she's, that must have been like a parking lot. Mm-hmm. It seemed like a parking structure, a garage or something.
Yeah, it was a garage. Yeah, an underground garage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. It just seemed so, it was so gritty and so like raw. And I was like, again, at this point in watching the movie, I was scared shitless that, like, maybe Jay hasn't even seen this yet. Like, this is something that he's watching with us, because at this point I was like, she's looking into the camera saying, like, who the f- do you think I am? Like, and I was like, are we watching something that, like, is more than just a movie?
Unless we forget
I was afraid for the marriage. Like, I'm like, wait a minute, what's gonna happen to Blue? Like, I was concerned about your situation at this point.
And the poetry she reads before this song is, if it's what you truly want, I can wear her skin over mine, her hair over mine, her hands like gloves, her teeth as confetti, her scalp a cap, her sternum my bedazzled cane. We can pose for your photograph, all three of us, immortalized, you and your perfect girl. I was like,
this bitch is crazy.
She already told us she chose crazy. So here she go. That's how I took it. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah. When she said I can wear her skin, I'm
Her teeth, I mean, as confetti.
Ooh. Confetti. And she said it just like that.
And she put them teeth. You know, Beyonce don't even pronounce all her letters all.
Nope.
So when she said her teeth as confetti, I was like, oh, shit. She meant that.
She said her scalp a cap. Not a hat. A cap. A cap. I was like, I'm done.
This was the that piece of poetry there was the epitome of crazy in love. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we know Beyonce and Jay came on the scene. Your love got me looking so crazy right now. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. That was it in that moment.
When
so
she said
crazy
that,
right now.
That is when I first became concerned for Jay-Z. When she started, I was like, now has anybody seen him? Have we done a welfare check on him?
Where he been at?
Oh my Lord. Have y'all checked on him? We got his number, y'all.
Jay-Z, call into the radio station. And then, you okay? Blink twice. Right. You all right.
And she says this whole thing where she says right before the song starts, the last piece of the poetry, she says, why can't you see me? Why can't you see me? Why can't you see me? Everyone else can. And I was like, oh, shit. Like, to me, it was just because I feel like we've all as black women certainly had that feeling. It's like I'm hyper visible and invisible at the same goddamn time. I'm so fucking sick of it.
Yes.
And she just gave just voice to all of that. And the duality of and the angst and what that feels like in your countenance. And she was like, who the fuck do you think I am? I mean, I don't know what else to say. She just, yeah.
I am Beyonce.
She is Beyonce. And so that was anger, obvio. And we move on to apathy with Sorry, which is, I stand corrected, for sure the most ratchet song on the album. So here we go. She's not sorry.
Trying to roll me up.
Also, this is the song the aforementioned Serena graces us with her presence on the visual side of things. And I'm not kidding you, I leaped out my seat. When she started coming down those stairs, I was like, bitch, all hell no, Serena's up in here. It was like, what? I just was shocked and so excited because Serena's everything. And also with this particular song, this I'm sorry refrain, it's Serena. Like, yeah, I'm the best and I'm not fucking sorry. All the shit that comes at her, she still ain't sorry. Sorry, not sorry. Like, and I just loved everything about that. But just to go through the poetry that came before this, she says, so what are you going to say at my funeral now that you've killed me? Here lies the body of the love of my life, whose heart I broke without a gun to my head. Here lies the mother of my children, both living and dead. Rest in peace, my true love, who I took for granted. Most bomb pussy who, because of me, sleep evaded. Her God listening, her heaven will be a love without betrayal. Ashes to ashes, dust to side chicks. I'll let you all talk about apathy here.
Man, listen. First of all, like you said, the I ain't sorry. Like, that is a thing that my close friends that we talk about is sort of this idea that when you're a fabulous black woman that you sometimes feel the need to apologize because your greatness intimidates people. It makes people nervous. I mean, it makes me think about Phenomenal Woman by Maya Angelou. She says, you know, does my haughtiness offend you? Like, I mean, the fact that I'm so awesome, like, are you offended by that? And we often feel like that, I think, as Black women, like this need to apologize. So I think you're right, but that's why it's so apropos that Serena is there, because people want her to be sorry, or they want her to be a quote-unquote more gracious winner. And it's like, fuck you, I won. Like, shit, that was the damn
like,
point.
Beat
it was
me.
For me to
if
win.
You don't like how like, I win, beat
right.
me.
If you don't like how I'm doing it, it's like Cam Newton when people were talking about him dancing. If you don't want me to dance in the end zone, then fucking keep me out. Like, that's really it. So I love that idea of this whole, like, I'm not sorry. I'm not sorry. And then, like you said, the poetry before that, like, you know, you have the greatest chick in the game. You have the love of your, you got everything. She doing you right in the bedroom, outside the bedroom. And you killed her because you want to be with Apache. You want to be with somebody. You mess with somebody who you didn't even really want to be with. Like, you just did it just to do it. And like, now I'm in the ground. Like, really? Okay. And then it puts me in the mindset of, on the last album when she, I think the song was Jealous, and she was saying, you know, she was waiting for him to come home, and she was like, you know, freak him dress out my closet. Beyonce filling out this skirt. And then she says, I'm going out, you know, whatever. It made me think of that. Like, yeah, I'm out. I'm doing whatever I want to do. And I ain't sorry. So there's that.
I thought back to the very beginning when she talked about all the ways she tried to reshape herself. Mm. And then she gets to this point where, you know what? Hey, I'm not sorry about being who I am. You know, why should I have to, you know, bend myself for you? And then you turn around and do this to me of all people. No. Mm-mm. And also in this song, I think this is a song where she says, I lied to you because it's, or you lied to me and I lied to you. It's my turn, or something to that effect. So, it's like one of those, what's good for the goose is good for the gander, bro.
Right. Right. Like, I'm out doing whatever I want to do. Mm-hmm. Just like doing whatever you want to do. Oh, you mad? Oh, you right. mad, bro?
You stay mad.
Then stay mad because I'm going to be out. I holla. Don't wait up.
Right. And she says, you know,
but,
she says,
but I
think
with the beat.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Like, with the beginning, with the poem, I think what struck me at, like, the poem going into this, what struck me was when she was like, you know, the mother of your children, both living and dead. Mm. Like, and I thought about how, you know, Beyonce has, she wasn't all the way open with it, but talked about like having a miscarriage before. Yep. And sort of like, you know, we heard that song in her, one of her documentaries, mm-hmm. that she'd written to, you know, to her unborn child, and just how that really affected her. And I, you know, like that, that really struck me because it just took me back to remembering that. And like, as a woman, you know, especially, you know, if you want children, and that was something that you really wanted, that sort of feeling, she's like, how could you know, all of these things that we've been through together, you know, how could you do this to me? You know, like, just thinking about that, really, it made me sad. Like, it made me sad. And I was like, Jay, what are you doing? like, how are you hurting Beyonce like this? What are you doing?
Yeah, and then
and,
the point
and to
that
fight
she got
them,
to.
I was like, ready to get my girls. Like, we got to jump, Jay. We got to jump, Jay-Z. Where this nigga live at? Like, give me the address. Do we have to fight today?
And it's such a progression, too. She's angry. She's apathetic. We have emptiness, which is coming up next. And obviously, there's a, you know, a depressing part that you have to go to kind of have rebirth. You know, you're almost getting down to a basal level of yourself. But she says in this song, today, I regret ever putting on that ring. And I was, the first time I heard it, I was like, oh, wow, she regrets it. And then I thought, she used a very specific phrase, which is today. She didn't say now. She didn't say a permanent word. She said today, meaning at this exact moment, I feel this way. And I thought it was really a good choice of words, considering what was going to be coming, you know, in the next couple of tracks. Ronnie, were you going to say something? Did I miss anybody? I don't know if Ronnie's still there. You still there, Ronnie?
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe not. Okay, so we're going to move on to Emptiness, which is 6 Inch. Might be my favorite song on the album. I don't know. I'm still deciding, but it's one of them.
Every time I listen to the album, a new song is my favorite song.
So true.
It switches.
Yes, I'm still here, by the way. Sorry.
Okay, cool.
Thank you. body and I was her witness.
Stacking money, money everywhere she goes. You know, pesos out of Mexico. Karma's in them decimals. She don't gotta give it up, she professional. She mixing up the ace with the Hennessy. She love the way it tastes, that's a recipe. Rushing through her veins like it's ecstasy. She already made enough with Chanel.
6 inch heels. She walked in a club like nobody's.
I was remiss. We actually didn't talk about the Becky with the good hair line from the previous song because we didn't get to go to the end of it. But obviously that's been getting a lot of play on the interwebs. I think it was obviously very specific. And also this choice of the word Becky, again, just makes it such a universal feeling and a universal theme for all of us to connect to. Because we all have had to deal with these basic ass Beckys out here in these streets in every aspect of our lives, whether it's work or school or dealing with, you know, significant others, families, all, I mean, they everywhere. And I just, when she said it, I was just like, yes, Beyonce, go see Becky. 'Cause I'm fucking through. And she said that shit twice. She said it first, yep. Said it twice, and then for the first time in the whole thing, Okay. Everything drops out. Fucking silence. She was like, yeah, listen to that lyric right there. Before we even move on, let that sink in, and then we'll get into this other thing right quick. But anyway, so Emptiness, 6 inch. Visually, a bit of a departure because we see way more color come into the fore. Red everywhere. There's fire. There's a red light bulb. She's swinging a red light bulb around the room. To me, this is kind of the like turning point of the album. And we see very different visuals from here forward versus behind this. And then the poetry, she sleeps all day, dreams of you in both worlds. Tills the blood in and out of uterus, wakes up smelling of zinc, grief sedated by orgasm, orgasm heightened by grief. God was in the room when the man said to the woman, I love you so much. Wrap your legs around me, pull me in, pull me in, pull me in. Sometimes when he'd have her nipple in his mouth, she'd whisper, oh my God, that too is a form of worship. And then we get this awesome song. So, thoughts on 6 inch.
My first thoughts on 6 inch were that the addition of the Weeknd was freaking perfect. Okay. Like first, this kind of, everyone's not a Weeknd fan. I understand. I sort of have my fave things for Weeknd. Like I loved House of Balloons. And this kind of gave me one of those kind of feels. It had one of those, It had that same kind of groove as something that would have been on how, like something from House of Boots. So when I hear, it was just so, he was just so perfect to be on this track. It seemed like it could have been, you know, like this beat, just the way it laid on it. Like it was everything to have him on there for me. Like I love the addition of the Weeknd on here, but I'll let the other ladies talk about the other stuff.
I like it because it feels like two songs. I love that, you know, the way she's singing is sort of that low raspy, you know, 6 inch heels. but I love that part of it, and it's just gritty, you know, that's kind of what I like about it. And like you said, the visuals I think are a definite turning point in the movie. And I think she says in this song, she's worth every dollar.
Yes.
You know, she, mm-hmm. you know, she works for the money. And so that double entendre, right? That, you know, that play on words that, well, if you hear about a woman who's working for the money, like, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. It's like, it means she's working for the money and she's worth every dollar. Like, that's what it means, period. Whatever that work is, she's worth it all. Mm-hmm. And she's working for it, you know? So I think right now it is my favorite.
Yeah,
I love the little lines in there. Like, she's like, I peso straight from Mexico.
Yes.
Sake straight from Tokyo. Like, she's like, I'm a baller.
Yeah.
Like,
I think lyrically this is her strongest effort to date. I mean, we're far away from Bootylicious. Let's just say that. I'm just saying, like, really, yeah. This is some next level shit she's got going on. Yeah. So good. And then, of course, the end of this, the house is aflame. She's leaving all this shit behind her. At least that's what I took from it. And we move into what I would probably have to say is the very first ever Beyonce country song, which first of all, just anybody who knows me, I love country music. It's one of my favorite genres. I listen to it all the time. Much to my husband's chagrin. I love it, love it, love it. So to hear Beyonce's voice, she had the twang. I love it. Let's hear it. Here we go. Daddy Lessons. Song is good. Her vocals are so ridiculously beautiful. So good.
So this song, for me, it felt really happy until I started paying attention to that chorus part when she says, uh-huh. He said, when trouble comes to town and men like me come around, my daddy says, shoot.
Yep.
That is sad because he's saying, I'm worthless. I mean, like, I'm not treating your mama right. And I'm going to prepare you for other men like me, but I love you. Like, that's like horrible.
Mm-hmm.
But ain't that what men do, though?
It is exactly what men do. It's exactly what they do.
You know, they'll tell you not all men, but they'll tell their baby girls, all men, baby.
Mm-hmm.
All men ain't shit. And, you know, that's what they'll tell you. So that's exactly how it is. Like, it's crazy. And she ended up marrying her pops. That's kind of, you know, she loved her daddy so much. And I think just kind of realizing that her two heroes, you know, she always held her dad up in such high esteem, and she did the same for Jay, and just kind of happened to deal with both of those, that both of these men are the same in you know, you married him because he's your father, but he's your father in more ways than you bargained for, you know what I mean, and or ways that you didn't really know or expect that he was going to be, but he's the exact type of man that your father warned you about, which is the kind of man that was like your dad. And you know, she was singing on Dangerously in Love about having a man like her daddy.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
So like to bring it all back to say like, you know what, you are exactly like my father in more ways than one. And, you know, is that the kind of man that I want to be with, you know, or it's sort of just as a woman looking and saying, damn, like, you know, I ended up with my dad like that. You know what I mean? Like you want to sort of break the cycle. You think you're going to break the cycle, and then you get to where you are and you're like, I repeated it exactly, you know, almost to a T, the kind of man that Jay-Z and Matthew are very, very similar, you know, kind of work their way up, like, you know, work their way up. And he really put everything he had into making sure Beyonce became Beyonce and Destiny's Child was Destiny's Child. And just that sort of work ethic that she saw in her dad, she saw in Jay, but they also had the same downfalls, you know? Mm-hmm. And you kind of have to, as a woman, you have to wrestle with that. Like, you know, what is my role in sort of choosing that for me? And is it what I want? You know, can he be better? You know, can the guy I chose, you know, overcome this? Am I going to stay? Am I not? You know what I mean? Like, it was so many things wrapped up. And I was just struck by this of sort of just thinking to her, singing about how she wanted a man like her dad. And I'm like, girl, well, your daddy told you.
Well, yeah, like, and I think, you know, she's had songs about her dad before, too. This is not the first song she's sung about her father. Certainly the you know, we've heard earlier songs that she sung about her dad that are very different in tone. But one thing that I came across on Twitter was at @FemmeEsquire. She had a whole breakdown of she saw from this, especially through this part. And she talks about how Beyonce was portraying patriarchy as destructive, faithless, murderous to her soul. Patriarchy is fatal to her marriage and family, with that daddy made a soldier out of me. And after this song, you see her switch. She stops talking about patriarchy and men, and she moves into her matriarchy and her mother and mothering and mothers and daughters and all these other things that she's able to find redemption and healing and love in. So this song has another kind of change in the tone of the narrative that she's building. And then we have the first sighting of Blue in this piece as well, where they have the bit of home video of Beyonce on the couch with her dad, and then a similar scene with Blue and her dad, and Matthew, not Jay-Z. So I thought that was really interesting to kind of at this moment bring the next generation into the conversation a little bit, which they hadn't really been before. And what does that mean? How do you confront this? And there also, I think, in this song, there was almost an understanding that if her dad was like this, right? She loves her dad. She loves her husband still. She loves her dad still. And what does this mean? I think we see this come up again where, you know, she doesn't just talk about healing herself, but she talks about healing him too. And it's just beautiful. But the song is just gorgeous, and it better be on the country charts. I'm just saying, better than anything else they got out there right now.
It better be. She better win something for this, because this is a hot, hot fire blaze country song.
And then we move into Reformation, Love Drought, which is really good. And let's play that one now. Good.
Trying to be fair, and you're trying to be there, and to care, and you're caught up in your permanent emotions. All the loving I've been giving goes unnoticed, it's just floating in the air. Looky there, are you aware? You're my lifeline, and you're trying to kill me. If it wasn't me, would you still feel me? Like on my worst day, or am I not thirsty enough? I don't care about the lights or the beams. Spend my life in the dark, but it's like you and me. Only way to go is up. Skin thick, too tough. You and me can move a mountain.
honestly, this song really makes me cry a little bit because, I don't know, I just, this realization that there's something there to save and the pain of going through that is so real to me. What do you guys think? I'm sorry, I'm a little...
You know, I've been there, you know, where you just like, look, I'm tired of you and I'm trying to really be like focused and be like, oh, we should probably save this marriage, but you on my last nerve. you tap dancing on it. And I love the line, you know, I think she says, what is it? 10 times out of 9, I know you're lying or whatever she says. But where, like, you know this person needs work and you know that, like, you need work and, like, you know it's a mess, but you also know that this love is, like, unreal, that it can move a mountain, that it can bring the walls down. And so it is very much you're very torn. And I feel like that's where this song is where, you know, I know you'd be lying and yeah, I'm real aware of that, but what we have though, like for real, what we have, like for real, when all the lights go out and the cameras aren't there or whatever, I know that that is real, you know, and I know that it's powerful. And again, that's the universality of it. I think that when not that I believe that all relationships are worth saving. There are some where you need to be like, hey, look, it's time for us to both go. Right. But I think the universality of it is that we've all had a love that was worth saving, that was worth putting up with somebody's crap, because you're like, you know what? It's worth it, because I know that when we are on, you know, when it's right, we can move mountains. And so that's really what I love about sort of the sweetness of this song. And that is definitely sort of the duality of love, that, you know, somebody is acting up, but you also know that when they, like they say in church, when they get right,
yeah,
it's amazing, right? But they ain't right yet. But
the poetry before this one too. She says in the poetry before this, she says, "Why do you deny yourself heaven? Why do you consider yourself undeserving? Why are you afraid of love? You think it's not possible for someone like you, but you are the love of my life." And so you just feel that. And we also have another Yoruba goddess, Yemaya, that comes into play. It's a healing goddess that protects both women and children. We see that with all the white imagery, the water imagery that they're walking on. This piece itself is gorgeous, beautiful. And also we get some more home movies thrown in there, specifically from the Super Bowl, which I thought was really interesting to see. Her laying on the field and everything was kind of cool. And then obviously the family's playing a bit on the field as well. Seeing that it could be okay. And I wonder where in the midst of all this she was during that, which, you know, was obviously a huge moment for her, to be headlining the Super Bowl. But yeah, another great, great song. And, we'll move on to Forgiveness, which is Sandcastles, which to me, I thought was the most traditional, quote unquote, Beyonce song on the album, as far as the vocals go. To me, this was like, okay, yeah, this sounds like songs we've heard from her before, but beautiful still. Just
scratched out the frame. Bitch, I scratched out your name and your face. What is it about you that I can't erase, baby? Whenever it promised.
And also we get Jay-Z for the first time in this portion of the movie. Super unlike we've ever seen him before, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So vulnerable.
And so sorry.
So soft. I don't know how else to say it, but his features were softened. His everything, his eyes, I don't know, was something.
This is where I start to emotionally lose it. Just seeing them so connected, you know, after all, this is where she finally, I was like, okay, listen, she's playing these ball-headed games with me.
And I finally exhaled.
Right.
I hope this whole time.
We all was like, whoo, Jay's there. All right, girls. Whoo. It's all right. He's right. He's there. He's there. Yeah. I thought it's a really beautiful song, and, you know, obviously blues in it, and all those videos are always nice to see when we get to see little glimpses of their life together and love.
Right, and I just thought in the beginning, like, you know, when she starts singing in that, like, guttural, like, what is it about you? Like, why can't I, basically, like, why can't I quit you? Yep. You know, like I scratched a picture, you know, I snatched the pictures out the frame, I broke dishes, you know what I mean? Like, and she's just like, what is it about you that, like, just, you know? And then she's like, I promised that I would leave, but, like, every promise doesn't work out that way. And I thought it was just such a, like, you know, we break promises and sometimes they're for the better, mm-hmm. you know? Like, maybe, you know, her breaking that promise, like she was done, you know what I mean? Like, I was done. And I promised that I was not going to be back here, but I'm back here. And, like, you know, we're going to do this as a, you know, together, like, moving forward. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was beautiful. I thought, like, the sentiment of that was beautiful.
Absolutely. I loved it. I loved it, too. Next up, we have Resurrection with Forward. And James Blake makes an appearance on this one.
Forward, best foot first, just in case. When we made our way till now, it's time to loosen, it's time to fight. Forward, now we can hold doors open for a while. Now we can be open for a while. Forward.
Then forward, we see the mothers of Eric Garner, Trayvon Martin, and Eric Garner and Mike Brown, along with a host of other people. But those three really, especially Leslie McSpadden, who's Mike Brown's mom. I mean, I don't know how long they were filming, but I mean, she couldn't even hold it for the three count that they were holding on her face. And that really touched me. Also feels like, you know, Beyonce feels like in the narrative of the movie, she's had some reconciliation internally, and now she's seeking to do that externally for other people, which is so her. And we see a shift again in the narrative of the music, where we're talking a lot more universal themes from here forward: hope and resurrection and freedom, which is next with Kendrick. What were you guys' thoughts about the very forward? Is very short; it's only a minute and a half long, so it's a very short piece. And the poetry before is not war songs. Actually, it's I don't know who wrote it, but it talks about love. What do you have? Love. How do we lead them? Love. So yeah, I don't know. I'm so good. And we move into Freedom. Hope. Kendrick. I'm going to keep running because the winner don't quit on himself. Thoughts on this song?
This is so gospel for me. Just very much a choir. And y'all know how y'all cousins do. Somebody going to sing this at the church musical next month. You know it. So just record it.
Be ready.
So we can see it. Y'all already know how the choir director is. He going to say freedom with Jesus. Y'all already know. But it was definitely, it definitely feels gospel, definitely feels, it's also a workout song. Like, I feel like, oh man, I could put this in my headphones at the gym. And it feels like running. So she's singing freedom, 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 and I see her like in my mind, it's just like running, like sprinting, like moving. And then she says that, I'm going to keep running, I'm going to keep doing it. And so and I see it as sort of this freedom in her as an artist. I feel like for me, the big evolution of Beyonce came at the last album when she sings that song Grown Woman, which is like the song I just love, 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 like love. And she says, I'm a grown woman. I can do whatever I want. I can say what I want, whatever. And so I feel like this is like just the continuation of that, right? She's saying, I'm free. And I also feel like I'm free from whatever pain that has been in my marriage and in my love life, whatever it is, not that I think we know it all, because I really don't. But I'm free from that, And so I'm going to keep pushing. I'm going to keep moving. I'm going to keep pushing and moving as an artist as well, right? I'm free to do this. Almost like I've paid my dues as an artist, I gave y'all Bootylicious. Y'all got it. Y'all got independent women. Y'all got it. Now I'm finished with that. Now I'm doing something else. So, and I'm free to do it.
I agree with everything you said, but also what really kicked me in this is that it feels like a Negro spiritual. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like it's a Negro spiritual on a Just Blaze beat and Beyonce singing her heart out. Like when she starts belting, we talk about like freedom, like when she's talking about freedom, I would never thought I would be hearing something from Beyonce, like I said, that feels like a Negro spiritual. And it kind of, the lyrics kind of call back to that, like wading in the water and just sort of little sort of sprinkles throughout the lyrics of the song that sort of allude back to different songs that we all know. And just as soon as the beat came on, everyone who is like a hip hop head or anything sort of knew immediately that this was a Just Blaze beat, because it feels like an old Just Blaze beat. Like somebody was like, bring Just Blaze out and tell him that we need something that sounds like
what we used to do back at the Rock. Like, bring it out. Mm-hmm. And I think she sung it so hard. Like, the song goes so hard. And I'm like, I can't wait to hear this in concert. No. Like, I cannot wait until she performs this on a stage. It is going to be, like, she gonna shut it down. Like, I can't wait.
Yeah, I was thinking that, you know, in movement spaces, there's obviously music plays a big role in it. But I was just thinking, like, you know, 2014 probably was, we heard a lot of Glory, you know, in conjunction with Selma. Last summer was all about Kendrick and We Gonna Be All Right. And I have a feeling that the summer of 2016 is going to be the summer of Freedom by Beyonce in movement spaces. So that was the first thing that came to my mind, was like, you know, what happens in those spaces is often very, for me anyways, very spiritual, very connected. And this song would go really well in that space. And I'm sure that it will. I'm really excited about it. We also see a lot of the young ones in this portion too. We see Zendaya Coleman, Amanda Stenberg, Blue Ivy makes another appearance looking so cute. Oh gosh, that girl is cute. And we also have Michaela DePrince as well. Go ahead.
Oh, no. I mean, I agree with every single thing you guys have said. That song is a feeling to me. And a couple things stick out for me. In the song, she says, you know, painting the white flag blue. In other words, I'm not surrendering. I'm painting that flag blue, i.e. for my daughter, for the future of, you know, young Black women. And then having that little girl up there dancing. Mm. Free Black girl, that should be in a dictionary beside Free Black Girl.
Yeah.
Just, you know what, you dance, you be glorious, you be beautiful, and I can't quit because of you.
Right.
Absolutely.
And it goes with that matriarchal theme too. Like, I, you know, we can't give up. These are our children. Like, you know, the poem that she said, I think, maybe not right before this, but before the one with where we saw all the mothers of the, mm-hmm. the children, mm-hmm. of the dead children. You know, what do we do for our kids? Well, we can't give up, because this world, you know, they're going to inherit it, and they have to live in it. And, you know, it's our responsibility to be better, to do better, to make it better. And I think that was sort of, you know, what sort of tied it together, especially as, you know, she's singing to them in the, like, if it serves me correctly in the visual, she's singing this song and they're in the audience.
Yes, mm-hmm. It's true. She's singing it to them. So it's very true.
She's singing it to them. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we not quitting, you know, like, we're not quitting on this, and we're moving forward together.
And that, like, visual of that tree with them all sitting in it and everybody standing underneath it and all the what, I mean, I don't know. I just, it's breathtaking. The Spanish moss, all of it. Them, like, cooking in the beginning, you know, where they're, like, in the kitchen and they've got all the food and they're, like, gathering everything. I just, it's spectacular visually. We move into.
I break chains all by myself. Won't let my freedom rot in hell. Mm. Like break your own chain. Like, we gonna break our own chains. Like, we don't, you know what I mean? We gonna break these chains. We not gonna let the chains stop us. Like, the things that they are trying to stop us, we can't let them do that. Like, we can't allow it. Mm-hmm. And I just, it's such a beautiful sort of turn on not only what she was singing about in terms of, you know, freedom from all the pain of the past, but just it making, like, the political statement, like the sort of double meanings behind this is just so, it's so dope the way she sort of put this back together, like, sort of wove this together.
Mm-hmm. So moving to the last bit of the album, with Redemption All Night is the song, and we get two references to the title of the album, Lemonade. We have Jay-Z's grandmother, Hattie, giving a speech at her 90th birthday party where she says in the midst of the speech, "I was served lemons, but I made lemonade." And Beyonce also shares her own grandmother's recipe for lemonade in spoken word on the visual, in the movie portion of it. And you see this generational theme come back again in this song. So let's listen to a little bit of that. I really like this song.
We found the truth beneath your lies.
up and rub up and fill up, kiss up and rub up and fill up on you, give you some time to prove that I can trust you, then I'm gonna kiss up and rub up and fill up, kiss up and rub up and fill up on you all night.
Obviously, great horns in this, which are actually from an Outkast album, the horns on this song. And we get a whole bunch of footage of Beyonce and Jay-Z together, their family that they've built together. And the poetry in before this part, in addition to Hattie's spoken word, and she gives the recipe for her Beyonce's grandmother's lemonade. But she also says, my grandmother said nothing real can be threatened. True love brought salvation back into me. With every tear came redemption, and my torturers became my remedy. Which is really very pretty, but painful. I really like the song. I love the chorus of it. I love the change in tempo a couple of different times in the song, which is unusual for Beyonce. And I love that part as well. Thoughts on that song?
This song is like the epitome of makeup sex. Like,
yes.
It is totally like, hey, we have been like out of touch. We done fell out. I done like, you know, trashed your car. I done drugged some bitches. I done got my life back right with Jesus because I got freedom now. And so now you can come home. So now I can like, you know. Right. So I could like kiss up on you and touch you and like, it's just like that, you know, you're back, we're back. Like, you know, it's redemption. It really is like sort of that moment where you're like, okay, like we made it, like we got to the other side. I was served lemons. I made lemonade. That's it. Like we made it. Like that's the story of love. That's the universal theme, right? Like that's the bigger message is that it's true. Nothing real can be threatened, and that love really is a salve, and which is where we get the word salvation, right? It's a healing. It's a balm, you know? And so I think it's a really, and so one thing I love about the album as well is sort of that the songs are obviously very purposely and purposefully ordered, you know, that you sort of get to this place where you're like, wow, you sort of hear all of the crazy, the ratchet, the wild, the whatever, the painful, and you get to this song and it's sweet. And it puts you back in the mind of sort of that sweetness in the beginning, although she was thinking about something, you know, really painful in the beginning. Now she's singing sweetly again, but she's singing about like, you know, come here. I know there's a lot of people that want you, but I want to love on you. You know, I'm Beyonce. I love you, Sean. I don't love Jay-Z. I love Sean. I love Blue Ivy's dad. You know, like that's who I want. Come to me now.
Yes.
And I think what also like what kind of puts the point on that is like sprinkled throughout this is throughout the album is like at the end of songs when she's asking him questions like,
mm-hmm.
"What are you doing?
Yeah.
What the like? You know what I mean?" And then on this song, it sort of ties it all back together because at the end of this, she goes, "I've missed you, my love." Mm. And I'm like, for me, I understand that he's like, you're with someone. You like now, we're really back. Like I've missed you,
mm-hmm.
Like, and now we can sort of get back to each other and sort of knowing each other in the way that we know that we've known each other. Because when you're going through shit, you feel like that motherfucker, sorry, you feel like that person's a stranger.
You can swear.
You're like, who is this in my head? Because yes. I don't know you. Mm-hmm. Exactly. You've done so much to me. I thought I knew you, but I don't know
mm-hmm.
you.
So right.
You know what I mean?
So right.
To get back to feeling like I've missed you and the man I knew you were is back with me now, and I feel secure in that.
Like, that's some powerful shit. Like,
it is.
Because, you know, in the middle, you felt like, you know, you could never get back to that person. You mm-hmm. could never get back to that love in sort of in a true and sort of pure way. You could never get back to it. And it's not pure now, but it's fortified, strengthened in a way that it wasn't before. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's weathered some storms, you know, the sort of the wear on it makes it even more beautiful than it was, like a pair of jeans that you know, sometimes, you know, once you scuff those jeans up, those are your favorite jeans, you know?
Yeah. And also she says in Sandcastles, when Jay's there, she has the line where she says, you know, I need you to show me your scars. Right. She wants to see that he's damaged, too. And then in this song, she says, I'll trade your broken wings for mine. And that phrasing, I was just like, oh, my God, Beyonce, like breaking my heart. And then the poetry she leaves off with here, she says, you're the magician. Pull me back together again the way you cut me in half. Make the woman in doubt disappear. Pull the sorrow from between my legs like silk. Knot after knot after knot. The audience applauds, but we can't hear them. And I was like, okay, just shoot me now. I don't even know what to say, Beyonce, because...
Well, and it goes back to the beginning where she says, you're like my father. You're a magician mm-hmm. able to exist in two places at once. Mm-hmm. So this whole idea of being the sort of duality of her love, you know, the duality of her father, the duality of self, right? Mm-hmm. And even I think the duality of her, that I'm crazy and I'm jealous and I'm gonna drag somebody, but also I'll trade your broken wings for mine, you know? Mm-hmm. And almost like sort of both of them are magicians, right? That you can kill me and hurt me, but you also are the only person who can quite literally put me back together again, right? And I can bust the windows out your car to Reverend Jasmine Sullivan and you know, cuss you all the way out. But also I'm the person who says, show me where it hurts and let me fix it for you. Mm.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really beautiful. So, of course, we come to the end of the album and Formation is next. I'm not going to play it yet, but I'm interested to hear what your thoughts about the song are now versus when we talked about it when it first was released a month and a half ago in the context of this huge, massive, you know, piece of art that we've been able to encounter now. Or I should say, has it changed your opinion or your thoughts about Formation, where it fits into this narrative now versus it standing on its own?
I think sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I said, I think it's sort of the perfect ending. You know, this probably now that, you know, looking back, Formation is probably the only song on the album that she could have released prior to like the, you know, putting this together. That's probably the only song that could have stood alone. Like, without the other backstory, you know? Mm-hmm. But it's just, it just seems like even more, like, now you know, we've gone through some things, and it's sort of a defiant end to, like, okay, you know, we all go through pain, we've all been broken, we've all had to put ourselves together, but you know what, let's get information, and, like, let's get this work done, you know? Like, let's get back on it, you know? It's sort of like a call to arms, like, Which it felt that way, you know, when we talked about it before. I was like, I needed this. When we you know, broke this down before, it felt that way. But now it seemed, you know, it's a richer sort of experience listening to it now, just sort of seeing the work that went into the album and where she chose to put this. Because this is, you know, Formation isn't even in the video, right, except for
credits,
as part of the credit.
End. Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, I remember thinking, now that it's in the context of it, I was thinking more of, not to say a cautionary tale, but it almost is like, okay, we went through this and we've come out the other end and I'm stronger for it and hopefully we are too. But I slay every day, all day, not going to stop. We back on it. And it did give it a little bit of a different tinge, whereas before it felt like she was claiming something. Now it just feels like she's stating something, and it was a completely, like, that those two things were a little bit different for me. I mean, obviously the song's amazing either way, and also, of course, the hot sauce in my bag is interesting in the context of the visuals we had too.
I think, right. too, that I, you know, when I listened to Formation, you know, it came out and we were all like, this, you know, this is for us, you know, this is for Black women. And so it's definitely, it confirms that notion that we sort of thought that this was like her message to us as Black women, and that she was making a statement about police and police violence and Black lives. And I think that, again, the movie confirms all of those things. But I also think that we, you know, we all sort of talked about how, you know, she's, I think at the beginning of Formation, she says, I rock his rock necklaces, and she says, I like my, obviously my Negro nose with Jackson 5 nostrils, and everybody's like, oh, well, she's talking about Jay-Z. And she's talking about how much she loves her baby and her man, right? And we all were sort of like, yeah, she does. Like, I love my man, I love my baby. And then, but in the context of the entire album now, it's like, you know, you sort of see this arc of brokenness back to healing, back to like, I am just crazy in love again, right? I'm just, you know, back to, you know, drunk in love, you know, like I'm back to that place again with Formation. Whereas when you heard it the first time, you're just like, oh, she loves her family and she loves her baby and her man and all this other stuff. But then hearing it with the whole album behind it now, it's like, and I think you said this at the beginning, Leslie, you know, you sort of, we saw the climax, we saw the end before we ever saw the whole movie, right? Which Formation is definitely sort of the ending and like a perfect ending. And we saw that first. But it makes, I think for me, it makes more sense now, and it's still great, but just has some different meanings. Like you said, everything else, like you said, of course, I mean, just on a basic level, hot sauce in my bag. I mean, you're like, right. Well, there's that.
Yeah.
And also it's like, an emotional, recharge to get into Formation. Like, yes. Formation is all of that strength, but behind that, these are the things that we deal with to get us here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can be, you know, you can do public strong or that whole thing that they give Black women, oh, strong Black women, blah, blah, blah. But the reality of it is that, you know what? All of this whole movie says we too are human. And, yeah, we're human, even though we can fight for the people. We still have, you know, emotions, and we're still sensitive to things.
And I think the way, you know, just that idea of, come on, ladies, now let's get in formation. I think it was like, mm-hmm. okay, we can do this. We, you know, we've made it through. We've had reconciliation. We've broken through our pain. We're not going to let our freedom go. We've got this together. You know, again, that generational piece, the matriarchal piece, the daughter to daughter, the grandmother to mother to granddaughter. And then it's like, all right, we got this. Now let's get in formation and let's wreck this shit now. That's how I, that's the new kind of flavor that it takes on. It takes on such larger meaning when it's in the context of this healing, and pain that we've gone through. So yeah, it's so good. Any critiques of the visuals, the album, anything that you guys would kind of note that, you know, maybe was something that was a little off for you or something that you wanted to mention? Always like to leave the floor, man. We love Bae, but, you know, she's not always perfect.
I loved it.
Yeah, I'm still finding new things to like, so I haven't really...
Exactly. Like, every time I watch it, I'm still... I don't know. I don't have any criticism. I think it was probably one of the best things I've ever seen put together from a music artist, or just from... It was just one of the best things I've ever seen. So, I mean, maybe I'll have some criticism for it after I watch it for the 25th time, but, like, right now, I'm still digesting everything in it. Like, it's so much.
Yeah. I think that the things I've seen mostly in terms of critique has been, you know, visual representation of different kinds of women, Black women in particular, larger Black women, darker Black women in certain instances. I certainly, the only time that stuck out to me, especially about the skin tone thing, was in, there's a still of her with like all the younger people. And I was like, wow, those are some very light skinned young ladies she's got going on there. Mandela and, Chloe and Haley. I think that those are the two girls' names. And also, Amandala and yeah, all of that. I remember
Zendaya.
Thinking, yeah, Zendaya's up there, and I remember thinking like, okay, I see next gen and all, but that stuck out to me because it was such a strong visual, beautiful image. But it's one that I've seen a lot of places as well.
Which I think too. I mean there was a great piece in National Geographic about 2 years ago that talked about what, you know, the United States will look like in 20 years. And with the amount of, you know, interracial couples in our country, you know, there are so many, there are going to be so many more black women who are fair skinned. I mean, just, you know, because they're biracial. So in that way, that part didn't get me, which again, Ronnie personally doesn't have any personal critiques. But again, like you said, I've read some of those critiques about visual representation and obviously, critiques about her not representing, and I'm using someone else's words, the fat black body. And so, you know, larger black women. And I think that that concept is important, not just as like, I want to critique B just, you know, cause I want to, cause, you know, I don't want to. but also in terms of representation. So like I was saying earlier, you know, I rarely see, one of the reasons I love, me and my sister, we love Serena to death, is because my body, I mean, not it's wonderful, but my body looks like Serena's body. You know, our daughters who are athletes and dancers, our girls look like Serena. So, and you don't, we rarely see that sort of representation in music videos and things like that. You see like slim black women who, you know, whatever, like, but not muscles, not hamstrings. Like you see it like, you know, the Olympic year, like, yeah, you see, you know, everybody loves the Olympians and the track girls and all that. So in that way, I see the video and I'm like, yay, look, you know, they got Serena, whatever. But I can see, I guess, from a perspective of a larger black woman saying, hey, I'm not in that mood. I'm not there. So I don't get all caught up in like, this was for me, because maybe I don't feel like it's for me because I don't see myself. And so in that way, I get it. And I understand that. I mean, even when we talk about reading and writing for young children, you know, everybody wants to read and write about, everybody wants to read about things that look like them, you know? Mm. And so I can appreciate that. Although I get it from the perspective of being a, you know, kind of a gym rat musclehead girl, you know, and not really seeing those images of myself in movies and such. So that's all I got.
Excellent.
I can dig that. Mm-hmm. Like I can dig some of the, you know, some of the criticisms that I've seen kind of float by in terms of trans representation as well. You know, if anyone feels that they weren't represented, then I can understand that. And I can't knock anyone's you know, personal critique if they felt as if they weren't represented either, you know, either enough or as well as they would like to have been. But personally, you know, I liked it all the way around.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's an amazing piece of work, and I think last I checked, it was holding down songs from the album were holding down 9 of the 10 top slots on iTunes. So, and that's never happened before. It's something new. Again, that Beyonce is, she's always breaking records out here in the streets. So here she goes again. Well, thank you all so much for taking the time out to sit and talk and dissect all this stuff and love on Prince and love on Beyonce. And I know everyone will really appreciate it. And I really appreciate it because I like to talk and it's always good. And also I wanted a specific podcast out with only black women talking about this, because we've already seen the fuck shit stuff start with Piers Morgan earlier today, which already went off on Twitter. All sorts of stuff happening, and I'm sure it'll only get worse from here out. I think they've given us like a day to breathe. Piers couldn't wait because he's an extra asshole, but the other thing pieces are coming, trust. And so I wanted to have something out here recorded that was definitely a black female voice that we could say what we wanted to say about it and get all that out there. So tell everyone where they can find you, and I'll have all this on the show notes, but Ronnie, where can folks follow you and all of that?
I am on Facebook at Ronnie Dean Buren and Instagram and Twitter at Ronnie_Dean, D-E-A-N.
Awesome. And Ms. Smart, how about you?
I am on Twitter at think_P_smart, and I do a little show with two other ladies called Whiskey, Wine, and Moonshine. You can find us on the internet, Podomatic, iTunes, all that stuff.
Excellent. And Brown and Bella?
So I am Brown and Bella on Twitter. You can usually find me on Twitter. Also, I run La Bella Body Care.
I run LaBella Body Care, and while I have you guys all your attention, I did a coupon code for listeners of the show. If you put in Purple Lemonade, the name of the show, you'll get 15% off orders above $30. So with the minimum $30 purchase. So you can go in there, get silky for the summer, make sure your skin is fantastic and ready to go for all those close ups and selfies we're gonna be taking when you know, now that the weather's getting warmer. And yeah, that's where you can find me, Twitter at brownandbella.com. I mean, I said Twitter at brownandbella.com. Twitter at Brown and Bella. My site is shop.labellabodycare.com, and the business is also on Twitter at Labella Body Care.
And I will just give my own personal recommendations for items off of Labella Body Care, since we do have a discount code. I am in love with the soap souffle. What's that called?
Whip soap souffle.
It's amazing. It's like this super lathery and soft and wonderful shower, you know, cleanser. And also my husband swears by the Green Machine facial cleanser. And there, she has this amazing body polish that, I'm not kidding, ladies, when you use it, whoever you go to bed with will turn to you and say, what did you do to your skin? It's that good. So those are my recommendations if you guys are going to the site. And I'll make sure we have the code and everything on the show notes. So definitely check that out. And you can always find me on Twitter at Leslie Mack, M-A-C, and you can check the show at interracialjohn.com. Thanks so much, and we'll see you guys next time.